From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Now there's late running room for Twilight Eclipse's third. Big Blue Kitten's got a 2.5-length lead. Slumber, Twilight Eclipse on the inside are coming. Big Blue Kitten, Slumber, Twilight Eclipse. Big Blue Kitten won the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic.
Standard deviation, fifth down the center of the track, but well behind Nix Go. And Nix Go at 70-1, Alvin Jimenez. Nix Go, tremendous upset in the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Spiced perfection, incredible run from last to the lead, but Dawn the Destroyer is coming on the outside. Spiced perfection, Dawn the Destroyer, these two at the line. Spiced perfection, what a performance to win the Thoroughbred Club of America.
And it is Firenze Fire with the lead. Funny Guy giving chase with Share the Ride, but it's going to be Firenze Fire victorious in the Vosburgh, 1-3.
Teppan is just opening up with every stride. A late run from My Miss Sophia. She goes from fifth to second, but well behind Teppan and Julien Leperoux. When he said it was time to go, it was over. Teppan just toys with the field and the First Lady.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Well, here we go again. Last Saturday, I opened the show telling you about 11 Breeders' Cup Challenge races slated to be run over the weekend. This morning, we look ahead to another weekend filled with 11 Breeders' Cup Winning Your In races. The difference this weekend is that all 11 are going to be contested here in the United States, and more specifically, either at Keeneland or Belmont Park. Yeah, get tied on. Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the show that launched a network. This is the Equine Forum. It's presented by Woodbine Entertainment right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. The word huge is an appropriate adjective to describe this three-day weekend in thoroughbred racing. Colossal, enormous, gigantic, take your pick. Any of those would also fit. And with the Breeders' Cup edging ever closer, now, well, only, you know, I pulled up the countdown and it wasn't there. Don't you hate when that happens? 27 days, 9 hours, 47 minutes away. Come on. It has to be sitting right there in front of me. 27 days, 9 hours, 47 minutes until the Breeders' Cup World Championships return to Del Mar. Of course, we will be there. Is your exclusive radio home of every single Breeders' Cup race. You'll hear every one right here on the network. So this is it. If you don't show up on this weekend, there's a good chance you're not moving on to Del Mar. And on the flip side of that, and one of the things that truly does make the Breeders' Cup Challenge Series so successful, is that if you're the connections involved with a horse who may be a bit unproven and flying under the radar right now, you run the race of your life this weekend, and you're in. All fees paid. So this is your chance to prove that you belong, that you can compete in these big races later today, tomorrow, and that you can move on to the Breeders' Cup. Two of the 11 challenge races that are slated for this weekend were actually run yesterday at Keeneland on their opening day to the fall meet. And congratulations to the winning connections. The Phoenix was a win in your in for the Breeders' Cup Sprint Division. That went to Special Reserve, the 5-year-old son of Darley Stallion, Midshipman. Special Reserve recorded his fifth career win for owners Paradise Farms and David Staudacker. Trainer Mike Maker, jockey Joel Rosario, was aboard for the winning ride. The Darley Alcibiades was also run yesterday, and that was a win and you're in for the Juvenile Fillies. It went to Juju's Map, the daughter of Lane's End Stallion, Liam's Map. So congratulations to a couple of HRN sponsors there with the Stallions. Albaugh Family Stables, the owners of Juju's Map. Boy, have they had a lot of success in that race. Trainer Brad Cox, jockey Florent Giroux, the team with Juju's Map, and she moves on to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. Now today, you have four win and you're ins at Keeneland, one at Belmont, that's the Vosburgh, tomorrow we're going to see three more at Keeneland to go along with the Futurity at Belmont Park. This is also a very significant weekend for the thoroughbred industry in West Virginia. Charlestown is going to host the West Virginia Breeders' Classic later today. Not a race which figures to tie into the Breeders' Cup picture, but this is a day that means an awful lot if you're an owner or a breeder in West Virginia. You're paying attention to this day. And I'm going to spend plenty of time talking about that subject with Charlestown announcer Paul Espinoza later in the show. Trainer Kelly Breen, who sends out defending champion Firenze Fire in today's Vossburg at Belmont, is going to be with me as we go down the road to the Breeders' Cup at 9 o'clock Eastern. I'm also going to look ahead to tomorrow's Grade 1 Spinster with trainer Fausto Gutierrez as he gets ready to saddle the brilliant mare Latruska in that one. Keeneland and TVG analyst Scott Hazleton is going to be here this morning, as will Keeneland Vice President of Racing Gatewood Bell. So it is going to be another very busy 3 hours here on the Equine Forum. I know you've become accustomed to that each and every week, and I'm happy to bring it your way. Going to get you ready for this fantastic buffet of greatest stakes action this weekend. Also coming up at 10:30, you won't want to miss this. It is this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer, as I welcome trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin to, well, answer several questions. And one of the subjects that they are going to weigh in on involves Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert. And the question of whether or not Bob should be allowed to saddle horses in this year's Breeders' Cup. Think about that. Obviously, Bob has been, as you all know, on the hot seat following the positive tests of Medina Spirit after this year's Kentucky Derby. Bob is the all-time leader among trainers in Breeders' Cup history by money won. He is second only to Dwayne Lucas in the number of Breeders' Cup winners he has saddled. And with recent greatest stakes winners like Medina Spirit, Gamine, Private Mission, Pinehurst, and others, Baffert is once again holding an extremely strong hand coming into this year's event. So the question that I'm going to ask Dale and Tim at 10:30, one of the questions, is Bob Baffert not being allowed to participate in this year's Breeders' Cup would be? And I'm going to ask them to finish that sentence for me. And I'm really looking forward to hearing their take on this one. If you ask me, he should absolutely be allowed to run his horses in the Breeders' Cup. And I'm sure there's going to be plenty of you out there who disagree. But until Bob has his day in court, which has not happened yet, he should be allowed to run. It's that simple. Naira found that out. Due process means something here in America. But until that plays out, which again, sitting here on October 9th, it has not, Bob Baffert should be allowed to saddle his horses in the Breeders' Cup. And if you're worried about his horses coming up with more positives, forget about it. A couple years ago, Breeders' Cup instituted arguably the most stringent testing protocols and security measures of any event that we have in the sport today. In order for a trainer to saddle their horse in a Breeders' Cup race, they are made to go through strict protocols all week long, and those include pre-race and post-race testing, out-of-competition testing for prohibited substances, comprehensive prohibitions on anabolic steroids and other controlled substances, a 24-hour equine security watch, which begins 72 hours prior to the post time, and inspections, which are done by top equine veterinarians from the U.S. and Europe. And they inspect the runners on site throughout the week leading up to the event. Slipping one past the goalie at the Breeders' Cup, it just doesn't happen. It has been made extremely difficult by those measures. Very stringent testing. So if you're worried about that, forget about it. That's not even going to be an issue. And if it is, boy, the sport has bigger problems. So the poll question today, I want to ask you your thoughts on this. Should Bob Baffert be allowed to run horses in this year's Breeders' Cup? Going to make it simple. Should Bob Baffert be allowed to run horses in this year's Breeders' Cup? Yes? No? I'm really not sure. Those are your three choices. We'll give you that third choice for those of you who are kind of on the fence waiting to see what plays out. But yes, no, I'm really not sure. And you can weigh in on that question on our Twitter feed, at HRRN. You can do it on Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you don't do social media, I get it. That's cool. Shoot me an email, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know your thoughts. Should Bob Baffert be allowed to run horses in this year's Breeders' Cup? Yes, no, I'm really not sure. All right, boy, it is going to be a busy show. That is just one topic coming your way during I Ask, They Answer. That's at 10:30 Eastern toward the end of the program. But I kick things off right after this first commercial break with Gatewood Bell, the Vice President of Racing at Keeneland. He's going to tell you about a fantastic Fall Stars weekend, which began yesterday. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care Products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment, along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
World Class Racing is back at the Great Race Place, Spectacular Santa Anita Park, and be sure to join us for special holiday racing this Monday, Columbus Day. On Monday, we'll have $1 beers and $2 hot dogs with first post time all weekend at 1 o'clock. And fans, get into the spirit of the season as this is our final weekend for Oktoberfest on the grandstand apron. We've got traditional German beers, food, and German music throughout the day, so come join the fun. Oktoberfest ticketing is available online or in person. And bring the kids, our infield family fun zone is back with just $5 covering parking, admission, and racing program. You can also take a shot through closing day, October 31st, at a prize pool of $12,000 in our new Pick'em game by choosing a series of racing and sports props at santaanita.com/contests. Walk-up admission is once again welcome, and we hope to see you soon here at Spectacular Santa Anita.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 p.m. Eastern. Don't forget, on October 17th, we have the Grade 1 E.P. Taylor Stakes and the Grade 2 Nearctic Stakes. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
Hi, this is Shug McGahee, and I really enjoy listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Special Reserve has the lead by three. Aloha West is running off, and the 16th fold is here. The wire is coming. Special Reserve chased all the way down the stretch by Aloha West. Special Reserve, Aloha West. Special Reserve hangs on by a head over Aloha West to take the stall. Keenan Ogden, Phoenix, 1 minute 8.54 seconds.
Juju's Map in the final furlong of the Darley Alcibiades has a 5-length lead back to Matt Araya. Distinctly possible, Sequest runs late, but at the line, Juju's Map and Floron Charoux to win it convincingly. Distinctly possible second, Sequest was home third, multiple horse photo for fourth, and 1:43.52.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on this Saturday morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you once again. And that's the way things sounded yesterday from announcer Kurt Becker at Keeneland as they kicked off the Fall Meet and Fall Stars weekend. This three-day stretch of racing here in the Bluegrass is as good as it gets. There are no superlatives, no additional superlatives that you could use. It's just, I think they've all been used. It's just fantastic. Those two winning your ins yesterday, the Phoenix, the Alcibiades, I told you about the connections and the winners in my opening segment. Today, five more graded stakes. Four of those are Breeders' Cup winning your ins. Tomorrow, we turn our attention to two more winning your in races, including the Grade 1 Spinster and the Brilliant Mare Latruska, who is scheduled to go in that one. And to tell you more about this weekend and this upcoming meet, I now welcome in Gatewood Bell, the Vice President of Racing at Keeneland. And because Gatewood has done such a fantastic job in his short time at Keeneland, I thought it was appropriate that he is this week's Industry Star of the Week. In this interview brought to you by Stuart Morris, who of course offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation, and he wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. With multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. Well, Gatewood, good morning, my friend, and happy Fall Stars weekend. Is Gatewood there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me? Sorry.
Yeah, I got you. No problem. Good morning.
Hey, how's it going, man? How you doing?
I'm good, buddy. Yeah, happy to have you on board and happy to be talking about Fall Stars weekend. Congratulations on being this week's Industry Star of the Week. Boy, just look back on yesterday for a minute. What an afternoon of thoroughbred racing.
Yeah, it was pretty tough to beat, man. It's always been my favorite weekend of the year, just as a horse racing fan with the great racing they put on here at Keeneland, and you got a home football game, and we got really lucky with the weather, and man, it was just good getting a bunch of fans back here. Like, it was palpable, the enthusiasm. So it was an awesome start to what's going to be a heck of a weekend here.
Yeah, and a couple of the great performances in those graded stakes. You had Special Reserve take the Phoenix for trainer Mike Maker, Joel Rosario, and then Juju's Map, the daughter of Liam's Map, coming back in the Darley Alcibiades for the Albaws, who have had so much success in that race, and just two really nice performances.
Yeah, that filly looked really, really good. They've had some good luck with Liam's Map, too. She's going to give Asmussen and Calhoun's and all the rest of them a run for their money, I think, in a couple weeks out west. But that was really impressive, the way she rated with those two other horses kind of going up, forcing the issue a little bit on her. And she seemed to rate really kindly for a filly that's only run once and won two turns for the first time. And she just exploded down the lane. So that was really, really impressive. And they were all fired up. It was a shame they couldn't be here, but I think they're coming today. And, yeah, Special Reserve, that was a really good ride. He's a really nice horse. Aloha West, I thought, was going to run him down, but he held him off. That was a very impressive. I think those will be two to be reckoned with in 4 weeks out in Del Mar for sure, but it was a great day of racing.
Yeah, you know, as I say, Gatewood, on weekends like this where the weather is going to be simply spectacular over the next couple of days, you know, Mother Nature, she has to be a racing fan on weekends like this.
Yeah.
She has really blessed us.
It was pouring down rain all week, and we were like, oh, man, we got almost 3 inches of rain here on Thursday, and we've got some new drains in the turf course that were really put to the test, so they were working pretty good. We had the rail out yesterday 20 feet, so today it's back at zero for all the grade ones and stuff. So it should be, I'd say it'll be good on the firmer side of good. It'll be perfect ground and no complaints about the dirt track. Jim Pendergast and Alfredo and their crew just got this place in perfect shape. And we got a lot of awesome athletes here out to, I mean, the card today is just, I mean, I know I'm biased, but it's as fun a card as I've seen in a while. So we're really excited.
It's a Breeders' Cup preview. It's a mini Breeders' Cup card with the four winning your ins and five graded stakes. Yeah, tell me specifically about some of the stars that are going to be showing up there today and what people can look forward to in those five graded stakes.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think our main star, I don't know, she's just kind of the cool, I think she's the cool horse story of the year is Latruska, who we've been lucky enough to have her training here all summer and all fall. And she runs tomorrow, obviously, in the Spencer. She'll be very tough to beat. But, I mean, today, the first lady is as good a race as I've tried to handicap in forever. I mean, you got Althika, you got Harvey's Little Goyle, who won the QE2 here last year. You know, Chad Brown's got a handful in there. I mean, that's an incredible race. And then you got the defending Breeders' Cup mile champ from last year, Order of Australia, coming in and running against the defending turf mile champ, Ivar. Incredible race. Both 13-horse fields. Then you got the Breeders' Futurity, who we've seen, you know, Essential Quality come out of it last year. I mean, so many good horses recently. I mean, that's, I'm biased, but I'd argue that's one of the best two-year-old races of the year every year. And, I mean, you know, whoever, I don't know who's going to win it, but whoever comes out of that thing is going to have a big chance in a month's time. And you got Bell's the One. I mean, you got Golden Pal, a Breeders' Cup winner here last year, running against Extravagant Kid. I mean, it's a horse player and a horse fan's dream, if you ask me.
I love the fact that Order of Australia is prepping for the Breeders' Cup in this race because of the fact that you referenced the big win in the Breeders' Cup mile last year. That was at Keeneland on November 7th. The Order of Australia was a 73-1 upsetter last year in the Breeders' Cup mile. Ain't going to be 73-1 today, Gatewood.
No, I don't think he is. He's kind of vindicated that. I mean, he's only won once this year, but he's run some really good races that I would say his price will be about 15 times lower than that this afternoon. I think he's more in the 3-1 shot, but no, it's great that MV's a good pal of mine and the whole Coolmore team really supports American Racing and the Breeders' Cup, and we're really thankful that they brought Order of Australia, and they've also brought Empress Josephine, who's the Irish Guineas winner, here to run in the First Lady and maybe wheel back in the QE2, and then his son Donica's bringing over a filly for the QE2 next week, and obviously Godolphin's bringing in Althika today. So, I mean, three of our big shots today have shipped in from Europe. So it just makes it just makes the whole product a lot more intriguing to me when you get the, that's why I love Keeneland. They're coming from New York, they're coming from California, they're coming from Europe, they're coming from Churchill, and it's a big melting pot of class animals and connections, and it just makes it fun.
Yeah, you referenced the depth of that First Lady, which is going to be the eighth race on the program today, and Althika will be the headliner, but she's certainly not going to be an overwhelming favorite in there. It's a very deep, contentious field. And you mentioned Chad Brown. He has dominated that race in recent years. He's won each of the past three runnings, and he's won it four times overall, which is the most of any trainer ever. He has three starters in the race this year. None of them are figuring to be the favorite. Do we look at Chad Brown and say, okay, we're going to get value on Chad Brown in this race today?
Yeah, it's definitely one of those races where you could look up and you could say, how the heck did we just let Chad Brown and Jose Ortiz win a grade one at 6-1 or something? And I mean, all three of his fillies are very live. I couldn't tell you which one I would pick if I was betting on him. I probably shouldn't be, but I mean, he's definitely one to throw out at your own risk. I know the one filly drew outside, but, you know, good horses, post positions rarely get them beat. And I'd say he's got a chance with all three of them.
In just about 15 minutes, I'm going to be joined by Fausto Gutierrez, who is the trainer of Latruska. And you talked about her story and how special she is. A lot of people think she may be the best horse in the country. Forget about the best female horse in the country. She has been absolutely brilliant here in 2021.
I think when you couldn't hear me or I said hello, as I was saying hello to Fausto, he was watching a set breeze here right before the break. No, he is just a gentleman. I'll have to listen to that interview. He's a gentleman. He's a really, really nice guy. Obviously done a hell of a job with that filly and a whole lot of other ones. He's no stranger to the limelight previously in his career. So he's a great guy. He's done a great job with that filly. And she's just one of those cool, like, just throwback. She just trains, looks awesome. The more she trains, she seems to thrive. You know, kind of reminds me of a holy bull, like, just takes it to him and come and get me and runs every 3 weeks. And yeah, she's kind of a media and a fan favorite for sure, and very deservingly so.
Talking with Keeneland Vice President of Racing, Gatewood Bell, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Gatewood, look ahead to the rest of the meet. I know you have some other major stakes races coming up next weekend. You have one more win, and you're in the middle of the week later this week, too. So tell me about what folks can expect over the next few weeks.
Yeah, our last win, and you're in, is on Wednesday. It's kind of a little odd that it's on a Wednesday, but it's what makes the racing year great. I mean, every day, Wednesday through Sunday, you're getting quality fields, and we've got, you know, three nice allowance races, and then a Grade Two, the Jesmond 14-horse field, two AEs. It's going to be an awesome race. And then coming into this weekend, you got QE2 day on Saturday. We got the Buffalo Trace before that on Friday. Following weekend is always Raven, is kind of anchored by Raven Run Day. And this year we brought back the Perryville, so it's the 7-furlong colt equivalent of the Raven Run. So it's just going to be for straight 3-year-olds going 7/8, called the Perryville. And then we've really tried to, I mean, I know, like, this opening weekend is awesome. It's Fall Stars, and it's front-loaded because these are all the best animals running and prepping for the Breeders' Cup. But we really tried this year to create kind of bookends for the meet and keep everybody's interest going through the quality going through the whole 4 weeks here. So on closing weekend, we've kind of anchored that where we're going to have 2 stakes on closing Friday and 3 stakes on closing Saturday, anchored by the Fayette. And then we're bringing back the Bryan Station, which is for 3-year-old colts on the grass. And we've got 2 new 2-year-old sprint stakes. I just kind of thought that was a little gap in the calendar where there wasn't really a race like that, sprinting for the fillies and the colts with the 2-year-olds. You know, not every horse can be a Breeders' Cup horse, and not every horse is ready in time. So we've got those two, the Myrtlewood and the Bowman Mill, on Friday, Saturday. And the Valley View is on Friday as well. So we've got 5 really good stakes races, anchoring closing weekend, which will roll right into, you know, Churchill's Fall Stars, and then their Thanksgiving meet. So it should be really, really good racing for the entire meet through. And that's kind of the plan of attack this year, to keep the quality streaming through the whole 4 weeks.
You know, Gatewood, I'm always curious when I listen to you talk and have you run through all of those big stakes races, and we know what Keeneland represents in our sport, and we know that everybody wants to win a race at Keeneland because you're essentially winning in front of the home crowd with the owners and the breeders, and, you know, this is where it all happens. This is the horse capital of the world. I know you don't do it alone. I know you have Ben Huffman, your outstanding racing secretary. It's a team effort. But when you start talking to horsemen about racing at Keeneland, whether it be the fall meet or the spring meet, is it as simple as saying, hey, here's our stakes schedule, we're Keeneland, we're in the heart of the bluegrass, or do you really have to work to get people to run at Keeneland because of the other competition around the country?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely, the last thing you want to be in this game is complacent and think that you can just rest on your laurels and people will want to come run here because it's Keeneland. You got to keep making Keeneland what's made Keeneland for the last 85 years. And yeah, there is competition, but competition's good for everybody. Racing is great right now in Kentucky, but we need to keep it that way. And, you know, obviously we don't have, we've got great purse structure, but we don't have the purse structure of some of our competitors in state and even out of state. So, you know, we're really focusing on, trying to get those purses as high as we can, but we know purses don't drive everything. And what you said is very true here, where we need to keep making it special to win at Keeneland, special to win in front of these fans. I mean, this is the most knowledgeable fan base, I'd argue, in the country. I mean, Saratoga has great fans. Oakland has great fans, and they're all great for racing, but Central Kentucky fans know their racing, you know, as well as they know their basketball. And, you know, all the owners and breeders are here. And it's special when you're walking to the winner's circle and you're getting congratulated by breeders and your competitors and other trainers and owners that are here. And it just makes it more special. And you get that Julep Cup presentation in the winner's circle for winning a maiden or allowance race. And it just makes it feel a little bit more special. And, you know, things like that, it's more than just money. Like, and money's great, but we need to keep creating this this atmosphere and this reason that people want to come run here and win here and make it a little bit more special. And that's one way we try and compete. And we're going to keep trying to make this the best place to want to run horses, but we'll still never just sit back and say, oh, there's Keeneland on the hedges out there. They'll come. We'll put out the stake schedule and they will come, but we still got to work at it. But obviously, like you said, Ben Huffman and his crew in the racing office is second to none. And I kind of just stay out of the way. And it's like going to a fantasy draft every day for me when we're setting the rundown and going through the entries and trying to recruit things. So it's more fun for me, and let the experts do their job.
With the Kentucky Wildcats hosting the LSU Tigers tonight here in Lexington, it is going to be an extended tailgate at Keeneland today, if you will, because that is one of the coolest things in racing here in the Bluegrass, where you have a home game, an evening game during Keeneland, and you get the visiting team with all of their fans that come in, and they're in their, well, today the purple and the gold. You'll have a lot of blue and white out there, and it really does turn into an extended tailgate atmosphere at the races. And Gatewood, that's so unique to racing here in the Bluegrass.
Oh yeah. There was a bunch of them. There was a bunch of purple and gold out here yesterday, but it just adds, I mean, it makes it so much more fun. Teams travel in, you know, get to go experience a new culture or see some racing. And obviously Louisiana is a rich racing culture down there too. So I think they tend to send a lot of fans up here, but
yeah,
the parking lot was jamming yesterday. It'll be jamming today. It's like the quintessential Bluegrass daily double or double header. You got to have a pretty strong constitution to be able to come out and rock all day here and then make it to the fourth quarter. But no, it's exciting. And luckily the Cats are 5-0, and it's even more exciting going into this game with all the hope that Stoops' teams brought to the back to the Bluegrass. So it'll be a big day. And if you can make it from the first till the closing horn of the fourth quarter, then you're probably a stronger man than I, but I might have been able to do it back in college.
There was a time. There was absolutely a time.
There was a time. I definitely would have. I would have tried at least.
Well, Gatewood, listen, man, it's been great to catch up. Always fun to have you on the program. Enjoy Fall Stars weekend, and go Big Blue.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, man. Really appreciate all your coverage and promotion of the sport. You all do a great job. So anytime we can help, just holler.
Thanks, buddy. Gatewood Bell, the vice president of racing at Keeneland, with me here this morning. What a weekend it's going to be. And that atmosphere is second to none. When you have that home football game, especially when it's a big game like this, and because of the fact that UK is undefeated, but they welcome in a perennial powerhouse in LSU tonight. And that, and Gatewood made a great point that Louisiana has a rich racing history. So a lot of the LSU fans are in tune with the sport of thoroughbred racing. They want to come here, not just for the game, but to experience Keeneland. And it is going to be one heck of an afternoon of thoroughbred racing, and what an atmosphere it will be at Keeneland later today. All right, when I come back, I'm going to get you ready to bet the races with today's first bet, and I'll welcome in trainer Fausto Gutierrez to talk about his brilliant mare Latruska going tomorrow in the Grade 1 Spinster. But first, it is time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the great folks at Lexus of Lexington.
This tidbit of thoroughbred racing lore covers the time span. Time span, in this case, being the career of a horse which was a record setter while racing, but whose credentials as a sire stamped his name in capital letters on the now yellowing pages of recorded thoroughbred racing history. Calumet Farm purchased his horse as a yearling in 1936 at the Keeneland sale for $14,000 from Coldstream Studs Consignment. As a performer on the racetrack, he was good enough to win the Widener, Bluegrass, and Kenner Stakes, the Thornton Memorial, and the Autumn Handicap. At Keeneland, just a stone's throw from Calumet, he set track standards for 1 1/16 miles and 1 1/8 miles. In 27 starts, he had 10 wins, 7 seconds, and 2/3. That composite was accrued in 4 years of racing. He entered stud in 1940 for a pittance, $750. But that quickly shot up when Twilight Tear and Duranza became successful on the racetrack as two of his progeny. These two were resultant of his first crop to race. He led the sire list five times, 1947, 48, 49, 52, and 53. He ranked second on the sire list three times, third once, fifth once, and eighth once. At the time of his death in 1964, he had been matched only by Starshot and the legendary Nasrullah as a leading sire. He was the very first stallion who's get over $1 million in a single season, and he did it in back-to-back years in 1946 and 47. His get included 28 $100,000 winners, and he sired 358 foals, of which 268 of them won. To the end of his final year at stud, his offspring had accounted for 1,723 wins. He was the daddy of the consummately superb Citation, the solid-performing, hard-knocking Coal Town, and the quintessential filly Bewitch, all from a single year's crop. Bewitch and Twilight Tear were two of America's very best mares of all time. Our subject's thoroughbred sired two other Kentucky Derby winners in addition to Citation in 1948. He was the sire of Hillgale, who won in 1952, and Iron Liege, who won in 1957. For 5 years, from 1951 through 1956, his get held all three individual money-winning championships. Bewitch as a mare, Armed in 1947, and Citation in 1948 were Horses of the Year, and Coal Town was named Outstanding Performer of 1949. Another of his get, Bull Page, was Canadian Horse of the Year in 1951. His offspring included these divisional champions: 2-year-old Citation, 2-year-old fillies Duranza and Bewitch, 3-year-olds Twilight Tear and Citation, 3-year-old fillies Twilight Tear, Thule, Wistful, Next Move, and Real Delight. Handicap Horse, Armed, twice by the way, Citation and Coal Town, Handicap Mares, Bewitch, Twilight Tear, Thule, and Real Delight, and Champion Sprinter Coal Town. This remarkable thoroughbred led the list of broodmare sires for four successive seasons, 1958 through 1961, and the offspring of his daughters included Quadrangle, Ambipoise, Blue Scope, Bourbon Prince, Finnegan, Good Move, A Pat on the Back, Bardstown, On and On, Restless Wind, I Dun, Tim Tam, Leala, Barbizon, Pucker Up, Dukes Lee Lane, and How Now. Among his get, subsequently becoming leading sires, including the likes of Citation, sire of Fabius, Silver Spoon, and many others, and Bo Max, sire of How Now and Golden Notes. At the time of his demise on June 16, 1964 at Calumet, he had established a record as the most successful sire of the 20th century in America. This son of Bulldog, out of Rose Leaves by Ballot, who left many memories, records, and a statue next to his gravesite at Calumet, and whose legend lives on to this very day, was Bull Lee.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Coming this November, it's the America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards, covering the best of the sport and lifestyle, all decided by the fans. Here's your chance to vote. The America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards.
Mark your calendars for Saturday, October 9th, as the best West Virginia breds in training take to the track for the 35th annual West Virginia Breeders Classics. The night features nine stakes races worth a total of $1 million, headlined by the $300,000 West Virginia Breeders Classic and the $175,000 Kavada Breeders Classic. It all gets started under the Saturday night lights at 7 o'clock Eastern. It's the 35th annual West Virginia Breeders Classics on Saturday, October 9th, here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races.
This is Wesley Ward. I'm the conqueror of Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They are all chasing Letruska, who ran three quarters in 1:10.3 and has the lead at the top of the stretch. Swiss Skydiver is down towards the rail. Harvey's Little Girl has asked for more. Bonnie South is in between horses. On the outside is Dunbar Road and Royal Flag. And now there's an eighth of a mile to the finish. It is still Letruska. Dunbar Road gaining on the outside. Royal Flag is there. And Bonnie South, they're coming on to the finish. It is Letruska holding on to the lead. Letruska won it by a half length. Looked like Bonnie South got second. Then Royal Flag and Dunbar Road.
Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, back with you on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. That was John Embriel with the call of the personal ensign. Letruska getting the victory over a fast-closing Bonnie South. They will get a rematch in tomorrow's Grade 1 Spinster at Keeneland, and I'm going to talk to Letruska's trainer, Fausto Gutierrez, coming up in just a minute. But first, it is time to get you ready to bet the races today, and to do that, it is time for today's first bet.
And now, today's first bet.
Today's first bet comes in race 7 at Santa Anita, the Swing Time Stakes with a post of 7:08 Eastern. It is number 5, Brooke, who is 4-1 on the morning line and has a 26% win projection from first bet. Rates 9 points higher than any other rival and is also one of Eddie Olchek's 3 hat trick selections today at Santa Anita. Third in the Wilshire and Megahertz over the Santa Anita turf, Brooke, the 2019 Chilean Oaks winner, drops in class out of the yellow ribbon. And number 5, Brooke, in today's 7th race at Santa Anita, is today's first bet. I'm back with more in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Welcome back. Mike Penn, the Baron of the Backstretch here. Fausto Gutierrez set to join me momentarily talking about Letruska in tomorrow's Grade 1 Spinster, which will be the final winning your in race on Fall Stars weekend. And I started the show telling you that there are 11 winning your in races slated for this weekend. Two of those were run yesterday at Keeneland, so 9 more to go between Keeneland and Belmont Park over the course of the next 36 to 38 hours or so. So it's going to be fantastic. Don't forget, too, that you have Maryland Million, which is going to be coming up shortly, too. Looking forward to the Maryland Million. And it is the 36th Jim McKay Maryland Million Day. It is Maryland's day at the races. It is truly the highlight of the fall meet at Laurel Park. And they now have their newly renovated dirt and turf courses there. It's all pretty cool. Saturday, October 23rd, is this year's Jim McKay Maryland Million Day. First post is 11:30 a.m. Over $1 million in purses and awards for Maryland-sired horses set to be given away. The pre-entry deadline is Wednesday, October 13th. So this coming Wednesday, you can call the Laurel Park Racing Office at 1-800-638-1859 to go ahead and pre-enter your horse, or you can go to MarylandMillion.com for more information. It's going to be one heck of a day on October 23rd. All right, so awaiting Fausto Gutierrez. We are efforting him, as they say. And looking forward to talking about Letruska. A lot of people in the sport are thinking that she may be the best horse in the country, period. And that includes Nix Go. That conversation includes Essential Quality, who, by the way, jumped over Nix Go in the Breeders' Cup Classic polls that came out this week. And I thought that was a bit interesting. I don't really understand how Nix Go can go out as the current number one ranked horse in the Breeders' Cup Classic poll, and he can go out last weekend at Churchill Downs and dominate the Lucas Classic much the way he was expected to. Yes, he was a heavy favorite. I told you last week there was no way that he was getting beaten that race. He didn't, but he dominated it in hand. And he dropped a spot in the polls. It's a lot like Alabama going out and dominating a much lesser opponent, but because they didn't play a big-name school, even though they won the way they were supposed to, they won big, they drop in the polls. You don't see that very often. And I don't think it should have happened with Nix Go. Essential Quality had the top spot in the Breeders' Cup Classic poll for, I think it was three consecutive weeks until Nix Go took over again going into last weekend. And Nix Go did nothing wrong. If you want to hold the competition against them, okay, but you can only beat the horses that are in the starting gate with you. And he beat them the way a heavy favorite is supposed to beat them. He wasn't life and death to hold on. He wasn't struggling to get to the wire, and another horse was battling with him all the way, and he won by a nose. He could have won by more. But a lot of people are thinking that Letruska may be even better than Nix Go or Essential Quality. And Lee, we can call Fausto. He just sent me a note. He's ready to go. So we'll have Fausto on the line for you here momentarily. But I'm gonna ask Fausto that question. Does he believe, and I know he's probably going to defend his player, but does he believe that Letruska, sitting here right now, is the best horse in the country? And he's probably too humble to... I mean, he's not going to say anything bad about Nix Go. He's not going to say anything bad about Essential Quality, the other two horses that are right there with her. But I'll be curious to see if he does feel like she's on par with those other two. Look at what she's done in her last four starts. She wins the Apple Blossom at Oaklawn. She goes to Belmont, dominates the Ogden Phipps, goes to Churchill, wins the Florida Lee by 5 3/4 lengths, and then wins the Grade 1 personal ensign at Saratoga. Four different racetracks, four major graded stakes, and she wins them all. And Fausto Gutierrez is indeed with me now, live from Keeneland in Lexington, Kentucky. Fausto, good morning.
Hello, good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm excited to see Letruska strut her stuff tomorrow in the Spinster.
Yes, this is the same emotion too I have. I listen to you right now, and it's a strong year, you know, with a lot of trips, different places, and more than nothing, in the middle of very strong races.
We have talked a couple of times this year, Fausto, and one thing I like to bring up to you is the fact that nothing phases this mare. She has run at multiple racetracks, different distances. It doesn't matter. Different jockeys. She just shows up and runs.
Yes. Finally, she's a horse with a big potential. This is obvious. And I think to all the work to be around her is good. Because she's a horse with a lot of character. We commented this one too before. But finally result in a in a nice combination. I designed a strong campaign for her. When I recognized the class of horse we have, I decided to fight for the Eclipse, and why not for the horse of the year. And this is the reason to we make all this, no?
I'm glad you bring that up, because I was just talking about this as we were reaching out to you. A lot of people feel as if Latruska may be the best horse in the country right now. Forget about the best female horse, maybe the best horse on par with the likes of Nix Go and Essential Quality. Do you think that she belongs in that conversation? Is she on the same level as a Nix Go and an Essential Quality?
Okay, it's a complicated question. The only two I know is she's one of the top mares. I know too, it's a very different competition with you one with the boys, and especially in this year, in this actual moment, because the style to run, to have Nix Go, Essential Quality, and another ones too, I don't have the name in the mind right now, make a very tough races, no? I think to Letruska improve every race, even the Saratoga race, be one of the most complicated, because she have to fight with the front runners, and after she have to have something in the tank to, because come the other horses for the back. And if you check the charts for that day, all the major stakes decide for less than one length. Just maybe Gamin, she win for a little bit more. And finally, Saratoga, no? It's one of the most complicated places to run for all the quality, for all tweets around there.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Saratoga brings the best of the best to upstate New York, as does Keeneland and the Spinster Stakes tomorrow. And I like the fact that you get a rematch with Bonnie South, who was second behind Latruska in that personal ensign last time. She also finished second to Latruska in the Ogden Phipps at Belmont three starts ago. You get a rematch with her. She wasn't far away from you at the finish last time. So what's the key to making sure that Latruska holds off Bonnie South again tomorrow?
Yes, she's a great horse. She's a horse to finish near to us in two times. And I think tomorrow is one of the most complicated horses at the race, at the Spinster. She have another style to run. It's not the same like when we run with the Shedder the Devil or other horses. But I don't know, we see. I think, too, this is the most interesting about the races, no? Don't exist two races to are the same one. All ones be different. And, of course, to Bonnie's side, is a quality horse and big contender for tomorrow.
Yeah, and she is the only runner in the Spinster that owns a win at Keeneland. Latruska has never raced at Keeneland, but you've been based at Keeneland training her since, I guess, mid-May. So she's very familiar with the surface. How does she get over that surface, Fausto, as opposed to like Saratoga, Churchill, Belmont? What do you see from her at Keeneland?
I think this is the place where she feel more comfortable. We have the chance to be here 3 months, and now we have here around 3-4 weeks with this area, no? To she know the track, the surface. And if you check the workouts, normally she work bullets here, and it's not a bullet to I tell to the rider or the exercise rider, hey, ask for an effort, no? Normally I ask, please work 1 minute, 101, and when I check the time is 58 and change, 59, but this is the natural speed she have, you know? This is to make a little bit different hair. So in relation with the track, I think too, she loved this track.
If she wins easy tomorrow, do you give any thought to the Breeders' Cup Classic, or is it strictly Breeders' Cup Distaff?
No, I think to the mind and everything, it's in the distaff. I think to the historical moment and the actual situation is to go to the Distaff where she's top contender. But the most important is tomorrow. You know, first we need to cross this race. I know to the Breeders' Cup it's in short 4 weeks because need to travel, need to have another acclimatization to that place, to Del Mar. But no, I think to the intelligent move right now is to still at the Distaff.
Talking with trainer Fausto Gutierrez here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Latruska going as the likely heavy favorite in tomorrow's Grade 1 Spinster at Keeneland. Fausto, a native of Mexico, one of the leading trainers in that country, came back to the United States, opened his U.S. operation in 2019, and here he is with a fantastic filly and quite potentially the top horse in the country. She has been brilliant. Fausto, before I let you go, finish this sentence for me. To have a horse like Latruska is blank.
It's what, sorry?
Say it again?
I don't listen to the question.
Oh, to have a horse, just complete the sentence. To have a horse like Latruska in your barn is what?
No, but this is absolutely... make a difference between the day and the night, you know. I think to ease the push to any new trainer in this country, and this this is maybe the most top competition in the world, United States for the thoroughbred. And when I have the privilege to work with a horse like Latruska, make a big difference in everything, no? Like a lot of persons tell, maybe this is a horse for one time in a life. I hope to know. But yes, she's a very, very special horse, especially for all to have back, no? We come together from Mexico. And when I turn back and I see 7 graduated stakes, sometimes I can't believe, you know.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. And what a run it's been for Fausto Gutierrez and for Latruska. Fausto, I hope it continues tomorrow. All the best in the Spinster. You're always a gentleman, and you're always very gracious with your time. Appreciate it, and good luck tomorrow.
Thank you for everything.
All right, Fausto Gutierrez here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You know, he told me in an interview back at the end of June before she won at Churchill Downs, before she took the Fleur de Lis, he said, she is not a Cinderella anymore. And that was after winning the Ogden Phipps. She's not. She's not a Cinderella story. She now belongs, and she belongs at a very high level. And, again, so many people thinking she might be the top horse in the country. We'll see how she handles things tomorrow in that Spinster. I'm back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Gainsway Stallion Caracanti is off to a strong start at stud. A leading sire amongst his crop by percentage of stakes horses, top runners by Caracanti include greatest stakes winners Kenzai Warrior.
But Kenzai Warrior is sticking his head down and getting up. Kenzai Warrior wins the Horace Hill.
Sole Volante.
On the outside, Sole Volante runs by the leader. It's Sole Volante in front and going away.
2-year-old stakes winner Spanish Love Affair.
16th to go, Spanish Love Affair almost home. Spanish Love Affair lives up to the hype and wins it 1-2.
And dual surface dynamo, Princess Grace.
16th to go, Princess Grace still in front. Pasta Plate is trying hard, but she's second to Princess Grace, streaking under the wire, the three-length winner.
A rising star with greatest stakes winners on both dirt and turf, Caracanti, standing at Gainsway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I
truly believe in, there's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
We have the world at our fingertips, inspiration in our touch, and power in our hands. Our hands, gentle enough to hold the next generation, yet strong enough to build movements that can change the world. Our hands can build relationships, frame ideas, and empower communities. We have the ability to share and imagine, create and comfort, love and heal the world around us. And it doesn't stop there. Right here, in our hands, we have the power to save a life. If you see a teen or adult suddenly collapse, call 911 and push hard and fast in the center of the chest.
The power is in your hands.
Anthem Foundation is the proud national supporter of the American Heart Association's Hands Only CPR campaign.
I'm three-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I'm listening to Horse Racing Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Firenze Fire is right there, and the field heads for home, the half in 45-2. Firenze Fire right alongside of Share the Ride. Funny Guys on the outside, and now they're past the eight pole. And it is Firenze Fire with the lead. Funny Guy giving chase with Share the Ride, but it's going to be Firenze Fire. Victorious in the Vosburgh, 1/3. Funny Guy was second. Pace setter Share the Ride finished third. The time was 1:09:03.
Firenze Fire, the defending champion in the Vosburgh. That was John Embriel with the call of last year's running. He's back in action later today for trainer Kelly Breen, who is going to join me to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup to kick off hour number two. That comes your way in just a couple of minutes. Paul Espinoza is the announcer at Charlestown, where they host the West Virginia Breeders' Classic later today. He will join me at 9:20, and then we'll turn our attention back to the big weekend at Keeneland with Scott Hazelton, who is the analyst for Keeneland and for TVG. Going to welcome him to the program at 9:40. 10 o'clock, it's In the Room with Sean Clancy. 10:25, Kurt Becker stroll through racing history. And at 10:30, this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin will both be with me, and we will debate several topics, including, should Bob Baffert be allowed to run horses in this year's Breeders' Cup? So far, that is our poll question on Twitter, at HRRN, and on Facebook, Horse Racing Radio Network. So far, 55% of you saying, no, he should not be allowed to. 40% say yes, and 5% are undecided, saying, I'm really not sure. You can keep those poll questions or those answers coming in. You can also email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, if that's easier and you want to do it that way. Don't forget that when you are in town for Keeneland, or whatever it may be, and if you're an outdoorsman, check out the new Outdoors Superstore, the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. And it is deer season here in the bluegrass now, and you'll have fall turkey season coming up. So this is the place to be. I was down there this past week, got a beautiful set of lacrosse boots, and actually ordered a second pair too. Tevis McCauley is the owner of Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. He's a former horse trainer, so you can talk some horses if he's there. And again, everything you need for hunting deer, turkey, ducks, so much more, even two indoor archery ranges. They are just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. The Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. All right, coming up next, we kick off hour two by going down the road to the Breeders' Cup, and I welcome in trainer Kelly Breen to talk about Firenze Fire. That's next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Yeah, it's a busy morning, and rolling on, 11 Breeders' Cup win-in-year-in races again this weekend. That was the case last weekend, too, but you had five of those in France with the Arc de Triomphe and their huge card over there. But all 11 are being contested either Keeneland here in Lexington, Kentucky, or at Belmont Park in Elmont, New York. And that includes the Vosburgh, which figures to be an outstanding race. Of course, Firenze Fire is the defending champion. He loves Belmont Park. He has won 7 of his 11 starts at Big Sandy. The other 2 times, he was 2nd. So 7 wins, 2 seconds from 11 lifetime starts at Belmont Park. Bodes well for his chances coming up later today. And to tell you more about that, I welcome in trainer Kelly Breen to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
It's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
Well, Kelly, I know you're hoping to be at Del Mar November 5th and 6th, and you're hoping to be there with Firenze Fire, who is the defending champion in the Vosburgh. First of all, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing Firenze Fire in action later today. What are you seeing from him coming into this year's race as opposed to when he won it last year?
You know, I think last year, I don't have anything in front of me right now, but I think we came off of a disappointing race up at Saratoga in the slop. And I was a little concerned to saying, man, what the hell happened to him there? And this year we're just coming off of a nice performance other than the savage part that he was right there and possibly should have won the race. That I don't want to call myself more confident, but this horse has been a lot steadier this year than with a couple of those races last year of him coming off of the first time off the layoff and then a couple of the slop races. So he's training well. He looks great. He kept his weight. He's really doing good.
You don't see that line in the past performances often where it says savaged foe. And that's what it reads for the grade one forego last time out. What was going through your mind as you're watching Firenze Fire try to kill his rival?
I was literally on the rail just past the wire at Saratoga, and I was kind of like, you're watching on the big screen, going back and forth to trying to watch it live to where you can actually see him, and I'm watching on the big screen, and it's like, did he just do that? And, oh, my God, what is going on? It was like a train wreck. You're trying to figure out exactly what's happening. But at the same time, you knew that he was running. You know, he was trying. So to see it, you know, probably over 100 times since it had happened. But when it was happening, it was like, am I actually watching this?
Is he an aggressive horse? Have you seen that behavior from him before?
In the barn area, he's been like that since day one, since we've been around him, where he's tough to catch in the stall. You know, he wants to be a dominating, you know, he's very strong. So you reach up to try and grab his halter. And, yeah, he wants to take a bite of your forearm. You know, you have to come with the carrot to try and persuade him into being happy. And when you're brushing him, he's one of those horses that, you know, wants to nip and tuck at you while you're rubbing on him and stuff like that. But generally, he's got his own cat that goes into the stall and plays with him. He's like the gentle giant, but you just don't want to poke the bear. And apparently, whether it was the horse that was ticking him off a little bit or you know, the aggressive riding, I'm not sure what it was, but don't poke the bear.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that question. What causes a horse to do something like that and lash out at another horse?
You know, we'd have to call up, you know, Dr. Phil or something like that and try and figure it out. But generally, he's a happy horse. He's got his jolly ball in his stall, and he plays with it, and he's generally a happy horse.
Well, one thing we know, he's very happy when he's at Belmont Park. He's won 7 of his 11 starts over that surface. Of course, the defending champion in the Vosburgh. Boy, that's a huge advantage, isn't it?
You know, just to know that he likes the track, he can walk right out of his stall, and it's just hopefully everything goes smooth enough in the racing as it does in my mind, because we look like we're in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, and you're right about last year. He came out of that 11th place finish over a sloppy track in the Forgo at Saratoga. Just wasn't his day. He came back and won the Vosburgh. Now he comes out of that second place finish in the Forgo. He's in much better form coming into this year, which has to make you feel pretty good too.
Correct, correct. That was, you know, like I said, I'm still breezing horses here at Monmouth Park, and I'm watching a couple that are going right now, and I don't have anything in front of me, but I do remember leaving out of Saratoga with our tail between our legs saying, I hope he's okay, you know, or what was that? And it was a deluge downpour of rain, and thinking that you know your horses, and you always have that thought, second guessing yourself, was it the rain, or is there something plaguing this horse? Or, you know, you're always thinking, you're always second guessing, and he came back running. So
I'm talking with trainer Kelly Breen, going down the road to the Breeders' Cup here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kelly, when you look at this year's race, only five horses entered into that Vosburgh later today, but it's a really well-balanced group. You're going to probably end up being the favorite with Firenze Fire, but Steve Asmussen has Jalen Journey in there. Bill Mott will send out Baby Yoda. Following C to the outside of you for trainer Todd Pletcher is a quality runner. This is a really good group.
Yeah, you don't give away the kind of money that New York does and not get quality. So knowing what we have, knowing the race, knowing that what was there, I'm just happy to have our horse and what looks like he's 100% fit, 100% ready, and good to go. If somebody beats us, it's going to have to be a better horse, and if that's all I could do.
Well, Kelly, since we are pointing to the Breeders' Cup, going down the road to the Breeders' Cup with this segment, I know you're hoping to get there with Firenze Fire, but any other horses that you have in the barn that you're thinking, okay, maybe there's a shot we can get there?
No, this is my one and only, my pride and joy. This is pretty much it.
Have you run many horses at Del Mar?
A handful. I think I was third when they... No, that was probably Santa Anita. If I've run a handful at Del Mar, it's probably five or so, if that.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question. If everything goes according to plan in the Vosburgh and he runs a big race there, you move on to the Breeders' Cup, what do you do to make sure you keep him on top of his game so that he can peak when he gets out there to Del Mar in the Breeders' Cup sprint?
You know, the training schedule we've had, it almost fit him to a T for this whole year, where he's run very close to between 4 and 5 weeks in between races. And we have our own program. We know how to gallop him, how to breeze him. And our program that's been on that 4-week schedule seems to have been working. So I won't change too much of what he's been doing. I know it's the biggest race of the year, and I pretty much treat it like another race. 4 weeks apart. Just keep them on, keep them idle, and get them ready to go when needed or when able to be asked.
Yeah, and it's an approach that's worked really good for Kelly Breen over the years. He's saddled over 900 winners in his career, more than $42 million in purse earnings. You can see why he gets it done year in and year out. Kelly, listen, appreciate the visit here this morning. I know you're busy. I'll let you go. All the best in the Vosburgh, and hopefully we're talking again in about 4 weeks.
You got it. Thank you, guys.
All right, buddy. Kelly Breen here on HRRN. You know, fantastic hearing him tell that story about watching Firenze Fire try to kill the competition when he tried to turn and bite his rival in mid-stretch of that last race, the Forgo, at Saratoga. And Kelly, you know, talking about it was kind of like watching a car wreck. You don't want to look, but you drive by and you have to take a glance just to make sure everything's okay. But you didn't want to look at it. It was one of those situations that you don't see very often in racing. It does happen. We've seen it before where horses will turn and try to bite a rival in a race. And maybe that happens more often than we even know. If it's further back and it's not involving the horses that are finishing 1-2. But that was something, you know, to hear Kelly describe it was pretty cool. And you hear him talk about Firenze Fire being a horse that can be aggressive, that will take a nip at you. not turning my back on Firenze Fire. And I suggest that the competition doesn't today either in that Vosburgh. Erod Ortiz Jr. is going to be aboard Firenze Fire, 8-5 on the morning line. Post time for the Vosburgh, that win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Sprint, is 2:45 Eastern. It is race 5 on the card. Everything is pushed back earlier to kind of get into that TV window. So 2:45 Eastern, race 5 is when the Vosburgh will take place later today. All right, going to get to another break. When I come back, I will visit with Paul Espinoza, who is the announcer at Charlestown. We're going to talk about the West Virginia Breeders' Classic coming up later today. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The moment we've all been waiting for is here. Racing returns to Keeneland for the fall meet, October 8th through the 30th. And tickets are now available online for pre-purchase. Place your bets during the fall meet anywhere, anytime from your phone with Keeneland Select. New accounts receive $100 back when you wager $200 on the fall meet, plus the standard $100 sign-up bonus. And Keeneland Select members receive free admission to Keeneland. Sign up to wager at KeenelandSelect.com.
World-class racing is back at the Great Race Place, spectacular Santa Anita Park, and be sure to join us for special holiday racing this Monday, Columbus Day. On Monday, we'll have $1 beers and $2 hot dogs with first post time all weekend at 1 o'clock. And fans, get into the spirit of the season as this is our final weekend for Oktoberfest on the grandstand apron. We've got traditional German beers, food, and German music throughout the day, so come join the fun. Oktoberfest ticketing is available online or in person. And bring the kids, our Enfield Family Fun Zone is back with just $5 covering parking, admission, and racing program. You can also take a shot through closing day, October 31st, at a prize pool of $12,000 in our new Pick'em game by choosing a series of racing and sports props at santaanita.com/contests. Walk-up admission is once again welcome, and we hope to see you soon here at Spectacular Santa Anita.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
And now there's an eighth of a mile to the finish. It is Sail By who has come away with the lead. Kinchin is gaining ground. McCulloch is kicking in on the outside. They're coming for the finish. Sail By wins it.
Sail By, the two-year-old filly from the first crop of Darley stallion Astern, took home top prize in the Grade 2 Miss Grillo Stakes at Belmont Park on Saturday. Also on Saturday, his daughter, She's Like Thunder, was second in the Salima Stakes at Laurel, and his other daughter, Tons Beauty, won a maiden special weight race at Santa Anita. Sail By is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Astern, Medaglia d'Oro's fastest son at stud. Astern already has 4 first crop stakes horses this year. Only Gunrunner, Practical Joke, and Classic Empire can top him. Learn more about Astern and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Mark your calendars for Saturday, October 9th, as the best West Virginia breds in training take to the track for the 35th annual West Virginia Breeders' Classics. The night features 9 stakes races worth a total of $1 million, headlined by the $300,000 West Virginia Breeders' Classic and the $175,000 Kubota Breeders' Classic. It all gets started under the Saturday night lights at 7 o'clock Eastern. It's the 35th annual West Virginia Breeders' Classics on Saturday, October 9th, here at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races.
This is Steve Asmussen. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
As they round the far turn, Heroes Man still in front from North Atlantic, running to Love Ya Opera Night. Then comes Buff's Eye View, and Awesome Faith swings out to the center. It's North Atlantic who turns them in. Heroes Man battles on, Not Tonight, running to Love Ya. Awesome Faith closing down the center of the racetrack with Buff's Eye View surging in between. Here comes Buff's Eye View and Awesome Faith. These two come down to the wire together. Awesome Faith at 35-1 to spring the upset over Buff's Eye View. North Atlantic and Heroes Man running to Love Ya did not have it tonight. The final time, 154-1.
Oh, that's the way it sounded from track announcer Paul Espinoza. Fantastic call of last year's West Virginia Breeders' Classic. Awesome Faith getting the victory. Huge upset, as you heard him say. Awesome Faith is back to defend his title coming up in this year's edition that comes your way later today, post time 10:32 Eastern. It is race 8 on the 9-race program, and I'm going to welcome Paul to the program and talk to him about Awesome Faith and about that program right after I remind you that if you are here in Central Kentucky and you are looking for supplies for your farm for the winter, whatever it's going to be, Woodford Feed in Versailles is absolutely the place to go. Bob Cleveland and his team do fantastic work. I've been telling you about them on this program for several years now. They also now have all of the Carhartt products in stock. So if you need bibs, pants, jackets, all Carhartt products getting ready for the winter are there for you. They have gloves, they have mud boots, and of course, they always carry steel equipment with chainsaws or anything else that you're going to need for the farm over the course of the wintertime. So check them out. Woodford Feed in Versailles, Kentucky, absolutely the place to go. And, of course, whatever you need for all your feed needs, too, they'll take care of you there. Well, Paul, listen, man, welcome to the program, and happy West Virginia Breeders' Classic evening.
Thank you very much, Mike. Good to be with you. It's always one of our favorite days of the year here in Charlestown is West Virginia Breeders' Classic night, and it is finally here.
I started the show talking about the 11 Breeders' Cup Challenge races that are taking place, started yesterday at Keeneland and then rolling through the weekend. The Breeders' Classic isn't going to play into the Breeders' Cup picture, but, man, this is such an important night for owners and breeders in the state of West Virginia.
It really is. I mean, and growing up, you know, this was obviously the night. There was no Charlestown Classic. There was no Charlestown Oaks. And so, you know, this was the night that that all of West Virginia's, the who's who of West Virginia racing, this is when they, you know, put on their Saturday night best and came out to enjoy, you know, the biggest night that we had to offer at the time. And it still holds its own as a fantastic evening. You know, while, you know, certainly Charlestown Classic, Charlestown Oaks, you know, they get the national, you know, horses. This celebrates, you know, the horses that, you know, are the backbone of our product, you know, the best and brightest West Virginia breds. And it's a breed that, because of races like the Charlestown Classic with Runnin' to Love You and like the Charlestown Oaks with Late Night Powwow, that, you know, these horses now, you know, they've come so far, the breed has come so far. And so it's just really, really awesome to see. And again, the fact that this is the local horsemen, men and women, as well as the local horses that get their time in the spotlight to race for $1 million total in purses. Just a fantastic evening that we look forward to each and every year.
Look at a horse like Awesome Faith, the defending champion in the Breeders' Classic. That's a race that's worth $300,000. And, you know, a West Virginia bred that's won 10 of, how about this, 57 starts coming into today's race. 8-year-old gelding. There are so many positive storylines surrounding a horse like Awesome Faith.
It really is. And, you know, Charlestown is a small enough venue where, you know, from my perch in the announcer's booth, you get to see and observe a lot of things. And that's one memory that will just kind of stick in my mind is seeing his owner and trainer, Jeffrey Scotty Allen, basically skipping on top of clouds on his way to the winner's circle last year, just overjoyed. This is, you know, it is a huge deal. I mean, even last year, you know, unfortunately because of, you know, COVID, you know, the purses were down a little bit last year, but, you know, even still, you know, that type of payday, you know, it just goes so far for these horsemen and women. And I believe last night at the Breeders' Classic Gala, Carol Holden, the president of the Breeders' Classics, announced that, you know, over the course of, you know, I guess these 35 years, they've been able to give away $29 million in purses. And again, that most of that is staying right here in West Virginia. And that's just so important. And yes, it gives horses like a North or like an Awesome Faith, rather, you know, that chance in the spotlight and that chance to get their connections, a huge payday and a well-deserved payday.
Paul, we've known each other for several years. You've done work with us here on the network, and I'm always amazed, as somebody who grew up wanting to be a track announcer, when you have a situation that unfolded like last year's Breeders' Classic. We just heard the call. You know, Awesome Faith, Buff's Eye View, North Atlantic, they're all kind of coming to the line together, and it was chaos in the final strides. I have no idea how on earth you and other announcers around the country keep it all straight, because that was a fantastic race call.
Well, and it's funny because that's kind of back-to-back years where we've had the almost exact situation, because the year before you had Run Into Love You, again, a huge favorite. And then, you know, he had that kind of mishap at the gate, and it was Castlebound, who I think was 60-1. And he kind of you know, came closing late down the center of the racetrack as well. The one thing that that bodes well for me on a night like tonight, and why the nerves aren't there in the way they are on other big nights, is that these are the horses that I get to call night in, night out, pretty much every month of the year. And so, you know, they're in your memory. You know, they're silks that you recognize. They're horses that you recognize, the styles that you recognize. And so, knock on wood, I'm sure I'm going to butcher tonight's call after saying this, but this is the night that, you know, you feel pretty confident in knowing that at least the memorization part, because you're not able to, or because you're not having to focus so much on that, the horses that you're familiar with, you're able to focus kind of more on the delivery and what you want to say. And hopefully that plays out the same way here tonight.
Are you one of those announcers that takes out crayons or markers and colors your program?
I am not, actually. Luckily, the one thing here at Charlestown that I'm very fortunate with, there are a couple things. One, obviously, because of the 6-furlong configuration, you know, when I'm looking through my binoculars, which happen to be the same binoculars that, you know, guys like Larry Colmus use at their big racetracks, the horses show up very, very big in my binoculars, and so I have a very good look at them. The other thing that's very important for me is that they do have the jockey caps that match the saddle towels. And so that's very important. If a horse does happen to be kind of blocked, most of the time you're going to have a view of that cap that matches the saddle towel. And so as of right now, at the age of 32, the answer is no. Check with me again when you have me on in 20 years, and the answer might be yes.
Yeah. I mean, everybody has their little tricks that help them get that, the color of the silks and the names in their mind. And I know Kurt Becker, he doesn't color his program either. He takes out a yellow notepad, and before each race, as the horses are in the paddock, he makes notes about each horse, where he'll write white blinkers or white blaze or, white shadow roll, whatever it might be. And that to him is how he ends up getting everything into his mind for the horses. And then he'll look at them in the binoculars and kind of give it one more look when they come onto the track. So everybody has their little tricks that kind of help them. I never figured that trick out, which is why I'm on radio.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you certainly want to, if there is one thing that's like the first thing that you notice when you look at a horse, you know, that is absolutely something that you want to keep note of, especially the one area where you might get tripped up a little bit on a night like tonight, is that you do have connections that are running multiple horses. Obviously, you're going to be hearing the name Jeff Runco. You're going to be hearing the name James W. Casey. You're going to be hearing John McKee. And they will have multiple horses in the race. So, you know, you will end up having some duplicate silks. And so that is certainly where you want to, you know, any sort of, whether it's, you know, it might be the color of the horse, like you said, the shadow roll, if they're wearing blinkers or not, but you do want to try to, you know, take advantage of any little thing that you might, that might differentiate, one horse from the other. And because, yeah, if they all start coming down to the wire together, then that's where things can get a little bit interesting.
Yeah. Visiting with Charlestown announcer Paul Espinoza here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Paul, let's talk a little bit more about the defending champion, Awesome Faith, in that Breeders' Classic. He doesn't come in to the race in the same form that he was in a year ago. As a matter of fact, he's 0-5 since winning the Breeders' Classic last October. His last four races, he's finished fifth. What's it going to take for Awesome Faith? Do you see any way that he gets back to the winner's circle coming up later tonight?
It is a hard case to make, unfortunately, for him. Definitely a fantastic story. The tricky thing is that last race that we saw him run, because that was the race that he was supposed to, if he was still in the form that he was in last year, that was the race where he was supposed to show a little bit more than what he did. You know, he has no problem historically with an off track, you know, that the distance has also not been a problem, and he was just kind of a dull fifth. So, you know, the situation that happened last year was, you know, again, Run Into Love You was in the race. He was a big favorite, and a lot of horses were they set a pretty quick pace last year, and so he was able to very much take advantage of that. And one of his chief rivals from last year as well, North Atlantic, he was actually kind of sucked into that pace a little bit early as well. And so that kind of, you know, left it open for those closers, Austin Faith and Buffside View. You know, this year, I don't see as much pace. I think, you know, Heroes Man will be prominent. Chief Randall will be close. And then obviously the favorite, Mwadib, is not going to be far away. But I don't see some sort of 47-ish pace that's going to set things up for him, which really could compromise his chances a little bit this year. It'd be a heck of a story to go back-to-back, but it's not something that I see in the cards for him.
Yeah, Mwadib has been perfect. 7-for-7 to begin his career for trainer Jeff Runco, and he'll have Arnaldo Boca Chica in the irons coming up later tonight. Tell me a little bit more about him.
So the aforementioned late night powwow, this is actually her full brother. And so he has been hyped from the start, as you can see. You know, he's been, he was odds on in his first six races of his career. He passed all those tests with flying colors. That race last time in the Frank Gall, it wasn't all that pretty. He got the job done. You know, that pedigree, obviously he's the son of Fibersign. We've seen sons of Fibersign win big three-turn races at Charlestown, see Run It to Love You. But the way he does it, it's just that question of when you have the undefeated horse that maybe isn't as fast on figures, you're having to weigh, you know, that versus the fact that maybe this horse just knows his job. And that is what Jeff Runco has told me, is that he thinks that Mwadib does what he has to do. That being said, I'm kind of looking right to his inside and his stablemate, North Atlantic, who's one of the coolest horses that we have on the grounds. He's an 8-year-old son of Ghost Sapper. This will be his 7th Breeders' Classic that he's run in. I should say the 7th Breeders' Classics card that he's run on. This will be his 5th actual Breeders' Classic. He ran in the 2-year-old race, the Moscarelli. He ran in the 3-year-old race, the West Virginia Lottery. And then he's been in the Classic the last 4 years. So this will be start number 7 on Breeders' Classics night. And he's yet to win a Breeders' Classic. I think this could be the year. I think he's the mile and an eighth, a little bit more up his alley. And so while certainly all the eyes will be on the other Runco with, you know, Boca Chica on Mwadib as the undefeated favorite, I feel like this could be the year that North Atlantic gets the job done, because that race last time in the Gall, I think, is better than it looks. Obviously, you guys remember that the rail was a very good place to be on Charlestown Classic at Oaks Night, and he kind of did his running late well off of the rail. And so while he was able to save some ground for the first, you know, 3 furlongs, half mile or so, I felt like he was against the bias a little bit. And so for this 8-year-old son of Ghost Sapper, I think he's in career form. And it doesn't get much cooler than again, 47 in-the-money finishes from 52 starts here at Charlestown. North Atlantic would be deserving of a Breeders' Classic, and I think he has a really good chance to get it here tonight.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You mentioned an 8-year-old gelded son of Ghost Sapper is North Atlantic. And the other advantage he may have, Paul, is the fact that he has been successful several times at this mile and an eighth distance. So he's proven, whereas Mwadib will be stretching out and trying a mile and an eighth for the first time. So that is a question that the favorite will have to answer. So maybe advantage North Atlantic there too.
Exactly. And that's why it was a tough race to make a morning line for, because again, you do have this, you know, when you have an undefeated horse at any scenario, like I said, you have to weigh all the different variables, and the fact that Boca Chica obviously sticks with Mwadib, I kind of feel like he almost sort of had to. I think, you know, anytime you have one of these undefeated horses, your hand is kind of dealt. This is the ship that you're going to sail on regardless. And so, but you know, taking a favorite or a horse that could be a short price, doing something that he's never done before, it definitely adds another question mark there. That, you know, it's just not a horse that, you know, will I be surprised at the end of the night if I'm announcing Mwadib into the winner's circle? Absolutely not. But it's just not a horse from a wagering standpoint that I'm super excited about singling in any sort of horizontal wagers. I would say that, again, North Atlantic would be the lean in the Classic for me.
Outside of the Classic, there are several other, it's a 9-race program, but several other stakes races, all for the West Virginia breds, coming up tonight on Classic Night, first post, 7 o'clock Eastern. What are a couple of the other highlights that folks can look forward to on that program tonight?
So the undercard main event is the Cavada, and that's the race for the West Virginia bred fillies and mares. That's the race immediately preceding the Breeders' Classic, their race 7. And so you have the reigning West Virginia bred horse of the year named Star of Night. And she goes out for Jeff Runco and Arnaldo Boca Chica. And she is a favorite that I will not be trying to beat. She is 1-5 on the morning line. And in my, you know, 5+ years of doing the morning line here, I think I've probably made, you know, less than 10 horses that number. And she will go off at that, and she will be very, very tough to beat. I think she is a serious filly. A filly that I would be very interested to see if they, you know, take a look around some of the other stakes in the Mid-Atlantic next year, because I think she's a serious runner and certainly not one that I'm trying to beat. It's always a fun night to see kind of the future stars. We haven't had to see or haven't got to see many of the two-year-olds stretch out around two turns yet, and so we'll get to see that in some of the earlier undercard races on the Moscarelli Memorial, as well as the Triple Crown Nutrition Breeders Classic. But those are some of the things that I'm kind of looking forward to. I also, again, just to kind of go back to a point we touched on for a classic, for, you know, anybody that's, you know, going to be planning on playing with us here this evening, you know, keep an eye on those races and those horses that did run on Charlestown Classic and Oaks Night that weren't able to save a whole lot of ground and maybe boost their chances a little bit more, because again, I felt like of any night that I've called here at Charlestown, other than maybe a night in the dead of winter when the rail might have been frozen, you know, I felt like that was the best the rail has ever been. We normally have a very fair and honest track, and horses can win from wherever, obviously based on seeing what Awesome Faith and the horses like Castlebound have done. You know, I think you can, you know, that's certainly the case, but that night, for whatever reason, that, you know, the rail was really good. And so, you know, move up horses that maybe were having to have wide journeys that night, and maybe, you know, kind of knock the horses that were riding the rail a little bit. Those races might not be as good as they appeared if they did spend a lot of time on the rail.
That's a great point, and we were there with the coverage, and you're absolutely right. It was there was an advantage being down toward the inside on Charlestown Classic night, and we'll see how that plays out coming up with those horses later tonight on West Virginia Breeders' Classic night. And again, post time 7:00 Eastern for the first race, and the Classic will go later after 10:00 Eastern. Paul, listen, man, appreciate the visit as always. Enjoy the night. We'll look forward to hearing your calls coming up this evening.
I appreciate you having me on, Mike.
All right, buddy. Paul Espinoza, the announcer at Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races. Back to the horse that he was talking about, the 4-year-old filly, Star of Night, who he said he made 1-5 on the morning line, and he did. That's in race number 7, the race preceding the West Virginia Breeders' Classic. This is the Cavada, 7 furlongs. Post time is 10:02 Eastern. She's going to break from the outside, which is a big advantage. Post 10, that shouldn't be a problem for her. She'll be able to see how everything develops. She has tactical speed. She shouldn't be far back under Arnaldo Boca Chica. She's a 4-year-old daughter of Airdrie stud stallion Creative Cause. She has won 9 of 11 starts. Her only 2 defeats, she was second. And Paul mentioned the fact that wouldn't be surprised to see her branch out next year and start going around the Mid-Atlantic states and trying some open competition and trying some of the stakes company at maybe a track like Laurel, for example. She's really good. She's fast. She doesn't need to be at Charlestown, you wouldn't think, because of the ability that she's shown. I think she can win outside of Charlestown. She's one to keep an eye on. Star of Night coming up this evening, and, of course, looking into next year. Put that one in your stable mail and follow her. All right, when I come back, we're going to turn our attention back to the big weekend at Keeneland. I will welcome in TVG and Keeneland analyst Scott Hazelton to take a closer look at all the stakes races later today. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The Breeders' Cup runs here, coming November 5th and 6th, exclusively on HRRN.
learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Coming this November, it's the America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards. Covering the best of the sport and lifestyle, all decided by the fans. Here's your chance to vote. The America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Forrester's Fortune, a four-year-old son of Old Forrester, takes to Woodbine's inner turf for the third straight time in Saturday's $100,000 Overskate Stakes. Sporting a record of 4-1-3 from 15 starts, he heads into his seventh stakes engagement in good order. Bred in Ontario by John Carey, Forrester's Fortune is trained by Rodney Barrow and arrives at the 7.5-furlong grass test off a sixth-place effort in the 5-furlong Vice Regent Stakes on September 11th. One race prior, on August 1st, the multiple stakes place gelding rallied stoutly to record a 1.5-length victory over firm ground. Barrow, a native of Barbados, is in just his second year of training and would like to add another highlight to his resume beyond his milestone first win last spring. An Overskate triumph would likely be front page news back home. Other contenders include multiple stakes winner Not So Quiet, a 1.5-length winner of the Vice Regent, and There's No Joe, a son of rookie sensation who has finished in the top three in 6 of his past 7 starts. Inaugurated in 1997, the race is named in honor of Overskate, the Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame inductee who holds the record for most sovereign awards, win 9. Saturday's live racing starts at 12:55 p.m., and that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Order of Australia, fourth up on the outside, 4 lengths off the lead. Circus Maximus, fifth. Ivar is sixth. Casa Creed is now back into the seventh position. March to the Arch is in eighth. Uni is still far back, center of the course, a dozen lengths off the lead. Halliday is the leader. Can it go to the inside? Circus Maximus coming from the outside. And then Factor This in fourth. Cambico needs room to the inside of Halliday. Here's Circus Maximus moving up in Order of Australia. Order of Australia has taken the lead in deep stretch. Circus Maximus still trying. Order of Australia looking for a huge upset here. Order of Australia gets that upset at 73-1 for Pierre Charles Boudot, who's having quite a Breeders' Cup.
Welcome back. That's the way it sounded last November. Order of Australia, Kurt Becker with the call, upsetting the Breeders' Cup mile, and Order of Australia back in action, returning to the scene of the crime, if you will. Back at Keeneland later today. It is a fantastic afternoon of thoroughbred racing in the Bluegrass. 5 greatest stakes races on the program today. 4 of those are winning your ends, including the Keeneland Turf Mile, which is race number 10. That is the race in which Order of Australia will be competing. Aidan O'Brien, the trainer, John Velasquez, the Hall of Fame rider, and just adds to the intrigue of what is going to be a very special day. And nobody knows that more than Scott Hazelton with Keeneland and TVG. He does a fantastic job walking through the races each and every day on television, and he will do it for you right now on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Scott, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Doing very well. It'd be a little bit better if our Pittsburgh Steelers were playing better.
It seems like it's going to be a while before that happens, unfortunately, doesn't it?
See, I told you yesterday I would try not to bring that up, but I just couldn't help myself.
Hey, it's a tough period that we're in right now, but let's hope that they can right the ship in the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, better things to come, no doubt about it. Let's talk about today's card. I mentioned the 5 graded stakes. It begins with race 6, which is the Woodford, and I guess we'll just take them in order, and I'll get your thoughts on each one. But tell me a little bit more about that race and how you see it.
Well, I mean, it's a race that goes through Golden Pow, doesn't it? I mean, you know, I wouldn't fault him for his run in the Nunthorpe he had the lead and he just got passed late, and those races on the straight are much different than around the bend. So I think getting back to races on a turn is going to turn his season around. I mean, he's been very obviously lightly campaigned, and it's pretty clear that the goal has been all year long, the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. So I think that, you know, getting back here to Keeneland, getting back home is a big plus for him. I mean, I think it goes through him, and you can't ignore what Extravagant Kid's done, but he was a bit flat in the July Cup. I wonder, have they asked a bit much of him with that international campaign? So we'll see if he's able to bounce back. But the one horse that does intrigue me, I think, could fire a big one is Firecrow for Ron Marquette. I have a sense that he's a horse that's on the upswing, and you know, even though he's run 15 times, he's run two very solid races since getting back onto the turf course, and he's got Gaffleone in the saddle, so that's another positive when looking at him.
You mentioned the international campaign of a horse like Extravagant Kid. Golden Pal, the favorite, 4-5 on the morning line, comes from York after he started at Keeneland, ran at Keeneland and Saratoga and those tracks here in the States, and then went over to York and then comes back. Are you concerned at all that there's a chance he could be vulnerable because of all that travel?
No, because he did it last year as a young horse. You know, he went over, ran at Royal Ascot, and he was able to bounce back with a giant performance at Saratoga and the Skidmore. So it doesn't worry me as much with him. And he ran, like I said, he ran a solid race. I know that the run line doesn't reflect it because you don't have the points of call like we're used to, but you know, he ran all right. And he had the lead, but they ultimately caught up to him. And you know, like I said, a 5/8 run on the straight is much different than a 5.5 run around a bend.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That is race 6, the Woodford. Race 7 is the Grade 2 Thoroughbred Club of America, 6 furlongs on the main track. And if you are just tuning in, we talked about this at the top of the show. The weather in the Bluegrass today is going to be absolutely spectacular. You're going to have temperatures in the upper 70s, fast main track. It is going to be a great day of racing at Keeneland. Tell me more about the TCA. How'd you see that one, Scott?
Well, I've always been a fan of Bell's the One, but I wonder if the 6 furlongs, you know, might come up a little sharp for her here today with the other speed that's in this race, to be honest with you. I think that Frank's Rockette holds the advantage at the 6 furlong distance. And, you know, this is no secret going back to the end of last year when Bill Mott opted to run her against the boys versus her female counterparts, just because he wanted to keep her at 6 furlongs versus 7 furlongs. So as long as she breaks sharp, I think that Frank's Rockette can get the jump on a filly like Bell's the One, who's the main threat. I'm not sure what to make of Estilo Talentoso as of late. I mean, I know that she ran against Gamine, but still 5th, beaten 4 lengths with maybe an excuse at the gate. And I think the other question in here, in the midst of Biz, can she bounce back to the form that we saw from her in this race, obviously last year? I think there might be a little reluctancy based on the run at Presque Isle, because she came into the TCA last year with a win in that same race, and she was not the same. So we'll see there, but I think that this race goes through the rail filly, Frank's Rockette.
Yeah, and the rail going 6 furlongs at Keeneland, you're okay with that?
No, I mean, it's less than ideal as far as a post position, but I think she's got the speed to overcome it. I mean, to win from the rail in any sprint race, you've got to have speed, you have to have good gate speed, and you got to blitz them, and I think Frank's Rockette is a filly that can do that.
Loves the distance, too. 9 starts, 5 wins, 2 seconds, and a third at 6 furlongs on the main track. So we'll see. She's 5-2 on the morning line under jockey Junior Alvarado. The race following the TCA, now we get into the grade ones, and we see the grade one First Lady, 1 mile on the turf. This is a race that Chad Brown has dominated in recent years. He's won each of the last 3 runnings. He has 3 horses in this year's edition. None of those are expected to be the favorite. Might we get some value on Chad Brown later today?
I think so. I think that a filly like Blowout or a mare like Blowout absolutely will be a bit of an overlay based on just the fact that Alfica will be the heavy favorite in here. I think Alfica is the star of this division. I think it's been established, and I would be shocked if that changes today or even moving forward to the Breeders' Cup. I just think that she's just really come on. There's no other way of putting it. And the way that she's won those 2 races and the way that she's looked in winning them, just from a physical standpoint, I think she's going to be awfully tough. But if Blowout's able to make the lead and keep on going, who knows what can happen. And, we got to see what the turf conditions are today. You mentioned it's a perfect day, but With the rain that we got this past week, we started off yielding on the turf yesterday. Eventually, the last race was upgraded to good on the turf. So we'll see what kind of turf course we're dealing with today.
You know, Scott, traditionally it's been very difficult to go wire to wire on the turf at Keeneland. And
yep.
I'm curious if you still think that's the case coming into today's card. Do you think that you'll see horses struggling on the front end as they traditionally have?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think that there's a chance that she could establish a lead pretty comfortably. Looking at the race shape here, you know, who's going to be the one to try to really, you know, take it to her? I don't think that there's a filly that's going to do that. Delica, I don't think, is the 11 horse because her speed comes at longer distances. And, you know, a mile is basically an elongated sprint. So, yeah, there is a distinct possibility that she could wire this field, especially with a jockey like Flavian Pratt in the saddle.
Yeah, we know she's tough. She gets hooked in the battle. She's going to dig in the stretch, so she'll be a tough out if she can open up and control the pace a little bit. Comes out of that race against the boys in the four-star, Dave. 8-1 on blowout, that would be a fair price to see if she can take them wire to wire in a race where she does indeed look like she's the lone speed. All right, let's move on to the next one because I know you've got a busy morning, my friend. The grade one Claiborne Breeders Futurity is race number 9, mile and a 16th. This is always fun, too. You get the two-year-old boys and a lot of different directions you can go in this one.
It is. I mean, this is, you know, the filly race was open wide open yesterday, but, you know, Juju's Map was one that you could go towards, and she obviously really took a huge step forward in the Darley Alcibiades. We'll see if we have that kind of colt in here. I'd have a hard time pointing in one direction, and I think a lot of people will try to with Classic Causeway, who ran a big number on his debut, but the outside post is the biggest concern. I mean, he's drawn post 13. There's other speed to the inside that's likely going to go, so is he going to sit a four-wide trip around there, or can he clear this group? If he can, or if he does, and he runs a big race, I mean, he just might be an absolute superstar, the horse out of Brian Lynch's barn, but I just think post 13 and start two of your career going long for the first time is a lot to overcome in a grade one race. So I ended up going to the Kenny McPeak runner, Rattle and Roll, who's progressed here in his three starts. And I think having that foundation underneath him, at least two starts, and in this case three, we saw with Juju's Map yesterday, I think that was a big part of her win, having those two starts under her belt. But Rattle and Roll, three-length winner of Churchill last time out, son of Connect, proven at two turns. He's got a solid post position. He'll be sitting off the speed, which it has to develop out in front of him, I'm convinced. So I think Rattle and Roll at 6-1 with BJ Hernandez has a big look in here.
We also see Stellar Tap coming back in this spot. Stellar Tap, a horse that will always be linked to history and to Steve Asmussen, is the horse that gave him the record over Dale Baird at Saratoga back on August 7th. But he disappointed as the favorite in the Grade 3 Iroquois at Churchill last time out. Any chance that Stellar Tap rebounds and could be standing in the winner's circle?
I guess so. I think it's, you know, it's possible, but it was a disappointing effort. I mean, he got position early and then he just got tired late. Now, maybe he just got tired and he'll take a step forward here today. But, you know, it's one of those things that I think is difficult to do in your third career start off of a effort like that, because Steve Asmussen is not coming into a grade three with a short horse. So, you know, is he the type of horse to go long is the question, I guess, for him. But we'll find out. I mean, this is a very difficult race. There's no getting around it. I mean, it's rare to find a horse like a Central Quality, but I don't know that we've got quite an Central Quality in this year's Grade 1 Breeders' Futurity or in the two-year-old division, for that matter. I mean, Corniche is a nice horse out west, and we'll see if he can keep on going for Bob Baffert. But, you know, this is a bit of a different year, as it tends to be, because a Central Quality is one that you don't come across very often.
Walking through Keeneland's Saturday greatest stakes races with Keeneland and TVG analyst Scott Hazelton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Scott, the final greatest stakes today is the 10th race. It is the Grade 1 Keeneland Turf Mile, 1 mile on the grass course, obviously. Tell me more about this one.
You know, it's very reminiscent to me of the Breeders' Cup Mile, and maybe that's just in my mind because of the fact that we've got Order of Australia in this race. Thinking back to last fall in handicapping the FanDuel Breeders' Cup Mile, it was considered the most wide open race. There just really wasn't a standout. There were so many question marks surrounding horses like Cameco and even our locally based horses. Were they up to task for this kind of effort. And I think a horse like Order of Australia, yeah, he was 73-1, but he proved that he was the best horse in the race, much like what we just saw in the Arc de Triomphe with the German Invader, who won at 70-1. That was a damn good run from him, and he's a really nice horse who beat two very good horses. And I think you have to take that approach when considering that and ignore the 73-1, because since then, yeah, they maybe got a little aggressive in going over to Hong Kong. His Queen Anne was not great to kick off the season, but he was running against Palace Pier, who's a very good horse out of the Gosden barn. But then he comes out of that race with a win, and then he just keeps very good company. Three Group 1 races in his last three starts, beaten by Alcohol Free, Poetic Flair in the Sussex Stakes, the Prix Jacques-Lemoyne. He was only third in that race behind Palace Pier again. But I was really impressed by his most recent start in the Prix de Moulin at Longchamp when he was second to Baid, who's an undefeated Shadwell horse trained by William Haggis, who we're likely to see run next year in his next year campaign. But I thought that second-place finish, he hung right there with him. Baid's a very talented horse. So looking at the company he's kept and the races he's put together, I think that this might be a bit of an easier spot than what he's seen as of late. And I think that we see him bounce back today with Johnny B.
Yeah, he's as good as it gets. Scott Hazleton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Scott, before I let you go, in 30 seconds or less, does Latruska win the Spinster tomorrow, or is there an upset in the making?
I don't see an upset in the making. She's established herself as the best filly in this division, and she's just going to keep on going. And I know that her connections love the way that she is when she's here at Keeneland. They love having her here. She's really taken to being at Keeneland, and I think that's all a positive. So I think that she keeps this championship season going and marches on to the distaff.
Always fun to catch up, my friend. Thank you for spending a little time this morning. I know it's a busy day for you. Enjoy the weekend and good luck at the windows.
Anytime, Mike. My pleasure.
Scott Hazleton, Keeneland TVG analyst. Yeah, fantastic. Really on top of the game and knows his stuff. So listen to what he says about those races today. He's one heck of a handicapper. All right, when I come back, I'll get you ready for the third hour of the program. A lot of great things coming up, including I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
70 organizations, 160 facilities, 7,800 horses, one accreditation. The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance is the only accrediting body in thoroughbred aftercare and is supported by all aspects of the thoroughbred industry. To learn more or to support the TAA, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
To be able to go back to the movies.
Introduce my family to my new girlfriend.
For my husband, who's been a chronic asthmatic his whole life.
So I can visit friends in a different state.
So I can take my granddaughter out to the park again.
So that I can hug my 85-year-old grandma again.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, hon, what you doing with your phone? Taking pictures?
No, I'm asking it questions.
Like what?
Hey, Bobo, do flowers have best friends?
I'm sorry, I'm afraid I don't know that.
Hey, follow me. I want to show you something. Look, flowers do have best friends.
Whoa.
Some answers can only be found in nature. Discover the unsearchable. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a trail near you. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
When kids need medical care, they will often face stressful and life-changing experiences. From complex treatments to long hospital stays, these special patients miss out on the things that most kids take for granted and let kids be kids. That's where Starlight Children's Foundation comes in. Since 1982, Starlight Children's Foundation has transformed the in-hospital experience for more than 17 million seriously ill kids in 800 children's hospitals and facilities across the United States. Our state-of-the-art programs like Starlight Virtual Reality, Starlight Hospital Wear, and Starlight Gaming, let kids just be kids, if even for a few moments. Whether donning an action figure gown instead of standard hospital issue, or settling into gamer mode, if it brings a smile, a laugh, or just a break from their reality, it's happiness delivered. Learn more at starlight.org. That's starlight.org.
Hello, this is Steve Cawthon, winner of the Triple Crown 1978 Aboard Affirmed, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Don't forget the 36th Jim McKay Maryland Million Day comes up October 23rd. That's a Saturday. First post is 11:30 a.m. It is Maryland's Day at the Races and the highlight of the fall meet at Laurel Park. And now with their newly renovated dirt and turf courses, it figures to be even better. Over $1 million in purses and awards for Maryland-sired horses. The pre-entry deadline, Wednesday, October 13th. You can visit MarylandMillion.com for more information. 2 hours down, one to go on this edition of the Equine Forum. Stay with me for hour three. It begins with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy, a visit with jockey Nick Santagata. At 10:25, Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly stroll through racing history. And then at 10:30, 10:35, right in that ballpark, it is another brand-new weekly edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. We will debate several different topics. You won't want to miss that one coming up at 10:30. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, ESPN 680 in Louisville, or on your computer, phone, or tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Now there's late running room for Twilight Eclipse's third. Big Blue Kitten's got a 2.5-length lead. Slumber, Twilight Eclipse on the inside are coming. Big Blue Kitten, Slumber, Twilight Eclipse. Big Blue Kitten won the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic.
Standard deviation, fifth down the center of the track, but well behind Nick's Go. And Nick's Go at 70-1, Alvin Jimenez. Nick's Go, tremendous upset in the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Spiced perfection, incredible run from last to the lead, but Dawn the Destroyer is coming on the outside. Spiced perfection, Dawn the Destroyer, these two at the line. Spiced perfection, what a performance to win the Thoroughbred Club of America.
And it is Firenze Fire with the lead. Funny Guy giving chase with Share the Ride, but it's going to be Firenze Fire victorious in the Vosburgh, 1-3.
Teppan is just opening up with every stride. A late run from My Miss Sophia. She goes from fifth to second, but well behind Teppan and Julien Leperoux. When he said it was time to go, it was over. Teppan just toys with the field and the first lady.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour three of the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment, rolls on. And this third hour, jam-packed with content for you. That visit with Nick Santagata, Sean Clancy going in the room with him at Saratoga earlier this summer. That comes your way to kick it off momentarily. And then Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history. That's a story you will not want to miss. And, of course, I Ask, They Answer, where I welcome in trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin to debate several different issues, including should Bob Baffert be allowed to run horses in this year's Breeders' Cup? And that is our poll question for this morning at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Also, if you don't do social media and you want to weigh in and cast your vote and let me know your thoughts on that topic, you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. And pretty simple. Yes, he should. No, he shouldn't. Or I'm not really sure are the three choices. All kinds of votes coming in on this one. So far, 63% of you saying Bob Baffert should not be allowed to run horses in this year's Breeders' Cup. I am on the other side of the fence. I think he absolutely should until he officially has his day in court. I think he should be allowed to participate
in the Breeders' Cup. But keep them coming. I will ask that question of Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin and be interested to hear what their take is. Huge weekend of Breeders' Cup races, 11 challenge races. Two of those took place at Keeneland yesterday. The Phoenix, a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Sprint, and the Darley Alcibiades for the Juvenile Fillies. Special reserve, five-year-old son of Darley Stallion Midshipman, winning the Phoenix. And Juju's Map, a daughter of Lane's End Stallion Liam's Map, winning the Darley Alcibiades. So nine more coming up. Seven of those will be at Keeneland this weekend, the other two at Belmont in Elmont, New York. If you missed any portion of the show so far, and we have talked a lot about the Keeneland races, and I spoke with Kelly Breen talking about the defending champion Firenze Fire in the Vosburgh today. If you missed any portion of the show, go back to our website after I finish up at 11 a.m. Eastern, and you can catch the podcast at your leisure. That's horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts and wherever you end up getting your podcast from. All right, well, busy third hour. Again, it does begin with Sean Clancy. He goes in the room with jockey Nick Santagata.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with retired jockey Nick Santagata at the end of Saratoga. What's it like at the end of Saratoga? It was kind of bittersweet, or what's it like?
Well, I mean, everybody's got their own opinion. They like to get back home quick, but, I mean, I love it up here. I mean, the air is fresh. The people are fantastic. The racing is great, and it's just a shame that it has to end. And, you know, you got to look forward to the winter, which is, you know, it's always hard to grind out and everything. But, you know, I just can't wait to get up here next year. Hope maybe they'll make the meet a little longer still.
And you've been in the jocks room a long time as a jockey and a valet. Talk to me the first day you walk in the jocks room as a young kid.
Well, yeah, I mean, you walk in the first day as an apprentice rider, a 10-pound bug, and, you know, I'm looking to the left. I have Angel Cordero. I'm looking to the right. I got Jacinto Vasquez, George Velasquez, and it's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, being a baseball player and you got the locker room with Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays or somebody. But, I mean, I was in all of those jockeys, and I still am.
You made it right there with them.
Well, I mean, my hard work, thank God, and my perseverance, it got me through a great career, thank God. And, you know, now I'm a valet. I have two riders now, and I just wish them the best of luck this winter.
Yeah, who are your two riders?
I have a gentleman from Barbados, good rider, Jalome Sommel. He's just looking to get some live horses, which he'll get pretty soon and make the most of his chances. And I have an apprentice 10-pound bug, Omar Hernandez, and he's just kind of started out from scratch over here at Belmont and Saratoga, and he's just waiting, you know, just waiting to ride a little couple live horses in the wintertime, and hopefully get his career started.
And you mentor those guys? I mean, as a retired jockey, you just try to help them out and give them some advice, or what's that like?
You know, I try to help them out a little, but, you know, everybody in the jockey's room, they're so nice over here, and all the riders always, after a race, they'll take them aside, and they'll give them pointers and everything, Jose Ortiz and Irad and everybody. And they'll just, you know, they just want to see him do good, too, you know?
So for you, in the jocks room, is it something that's just home, I guess, for you? I mean, you've been in there a long time and feel, I mean, that's your life, I guess.
After you retire, you know, unless you can, you know, the best job you can get, unless you get a live rider as an agent or something, you get a good, decent steward job. But, I mean, I fell right into the jockey's room, a valet job. And I love it there because, you know, it's kind of home. And I know everybody in there. And, you know, we're kind of one little big family in there. And everybody looks out for everybody. And it's a great job. It's a great place to make a living.
So when I'm driving on the, what is that, Cross Island or Belt Parkway, and I see that sign, Riding Academy, that's where it all started, huh?
Yeah, the Belt Parkway, right to the right of it. They still have a riding academy called the Jamaica Bay Riding Academy. And when I started out there, it was like 1973 or 74, 75. I took jockey lessons there, you know. And the guy said to me, listen, you're never going to make it. Yeah, he said, you never make it as a jockey. And he gave me a car to be a merchant marine. Hey, I'm glad I didn't listen to him, thank God.
So how did you wind up there? I mean, your family followed the horses, or you just walked in one day?
I don't know. I mean, I wanted to be in the bowling industry. I wanted to be a professional bowler. I worked in a bowling alley all my life as a mechanic. And when I graduated from high school, I don't know, I just for some reason, a couple of people in the Bone Alley said, oh, you're small, why don't you try to be a jockey? And I tried it, and I'm still here. Yeah, it's amazing. I wasn't fortunate like, you know, a lot of riders from Puerto Rico that can go to the jockey school, they can learn, and you know, you have guys like Steve Asmussen, who I used to ride against, and Wesley Ward, and they were naturals, of course. I mean, they were born into it, you know. Me, I had to learn. I was born on cement, you know, cement and smog, and I had to learn from scratch, learning from everybody, and you know, the way everybody helps the apprentices today. You know, Angel Kadarius take me aside and help me out, and guys like George Velasquez. That's why I always respect everybody.
So you go from riding at the Riding Academy. How long did it take to get to the racetrack from there?
Well, I mean, I tell everybody, I did everything wrong. I learned at the racetrack, which you probably shouldn't do. You should learn at a farm. I start riding at a track where I was aqueduct, you know, where I learned and start riding at, which you got to, you know, you go to a little minor track and, you know, you make your mistakes, you polish yourself up. Then you come to a major track. And number three, I signed a contract with a trainer, which, you know, I mean, it was those days, you know, you didn't sign a contract, he wouldn't ride you, so I wound up signing a contract, and I did everything wrong, and I try to help the, you know, riders today, and I try to, you know, point them to, you know, try to make better decisions than I did, you know.
You were just learning on the fly. I mean, nobody's helping you. You didn't have anybody in the no family in it. You really just learned on the fly.
Exactly. I mean, it was trial and error. You know, I mean, I ride a race, I make a mistake, I try to improve. I look at everybody. We didn't have no equalizer that day, you know, so you had to ride a bale of hay, you know. And it was just like I started from scratch. You know, look at Angel, look at Georgie, look at Jacinto. And, I mean, the riders I rode against during the all year round at Aqueduct made you be a better rider, you know?
And you made it. You made it on the New Jersey circuit, New York circuit. I mean, a lot of Aqueduct in the winter, and then you did great around New Jersey parks, places like that.
I mean, I did good in the winter. And when March, April came around, you know, I kind of knew it was going to get a little tough. Everybody come back from Florida. And I just didn't want to, you know, I wanted to ride a whole card, you know, a lot of horses and do a little bit and be successful. I went to Mama Park, which wound up being the best times of my life. And then I would come back again in the winter, in the fall, riding the Meadowlands and Belmont Aqueduct. But, I mean, I did a lot of traveling in my life.
And you won a lot of races. How many races did you win total?
I mean, I won 4,140 races. And I did it the hard way, night and day. I mean, people say, oh, yeah, why you won all the races? Why don't you retire? We had no slot machines in those days. We had no sports betting. So we couldn't, I couldn't have those purses, you know. I couldn't, you know, the purses they got today, they weren't there yesterday, you know.
Sure. Should have been a jump jockey. Talk about no purses.
Let me tell you, I rode 37,000 races, and you yourself and my buddy Ricky Hendricks, and I seen them ride jump races, and I would never do it. Those are riders that have nerve and a nerve of steel. God bless them.
Why did you make it? Hard work, talent? I mean, how did you make it?
I mean, I was athletic. I was okay. I was okay as a rider. Hard work. I mean, I would rarely miss a morning, you know, out every morning, hit every barn, you know, and try to work horses for trainers. I would work horses. I would go out of town to ride for them. And I would try to open as many doors as I can, you know. I mean, there's two things my father blessed me with. One he blessed me with was hard work. But another thing I was cursed with, my whole life was a temper, you know, and I'm the first to admit it. I mean, I wish I never had a temper. I wish I walked around the racetrack and the jockeys were like a Ramon Dominguez, you know, gentleman, soft-spoken, you know, but I apologize for my temper. I really do.
Yeah, I played a few softball games with your brother. That's born into that family.
That's what I said. I said it's in the breeding. You know, my brother, I mean, I was intense. You know, nowadays, if somebody's a good rider and he's got a temper, they call it intense. Me, it was the temper. But yes, me and my brother, we do have a temper. I have to say it.
So what about the epic five-rounder Harry Rice talked about? I mean, was that temper induced, I guess?
You know, I mean, if you have a whole bunch of jockeys coming back, you had a whole bunch of everybody going back into the same locker room, you know, tempers are going to flare once in a while. Probably a day or two later, we probably shake hands and make friends, you know. Nowadays, it's just, you know, they'll probably sue you or, you know, you got to go to court. So, you know, it was kind of like, you know, in those days, I mean, you can have a little scaffolding. You know, you shake hands about a month later, two weeks later, and you're friends, you know?
Who won the fight?
I think it was a dead heat, you know? So, probably was a dead heat, so I don't know. I'll let Harry ask you that one.
But your temper, was that something you had to try to control? I mean, you recognize that? Or in the heat of the moment, being a jockey, it's tough to actually recognize your flaws and try to improve things.
Well, I mean, when you come back after a race, and I was the kind of rider where, I mean, my opportunities were, you know, limited. You ride a bad race, you get beat, you know, you think, oh, I'm on fire, the train's going to fire me, you know, there goes my business. And, you know, so you kind of blow your cork, you know, you lose a big, you know, lose a race or somebody knows. And, you know, I mean, you see a lot of baseball players. Listen, there's a lot of jockeys and baseball players and athletes that have done everything I've done, and they've gotten sportsmanship awards, you know, but... Me, you know, I mean, it is what it is, you know. It is what it is.
But you had respect for your peers. I mean, that's important.
Listen, I have respect for a rider. You know, I mean, everybody says, oh, the riders, look at the money they're making, look at this. Well, listen, your life can change in a split second. Look at my friend Ramon Dominguez, or, you know, look at Rene Douglas and Ron Turcotte. I mean, who was higher in the game than they were? And then look at Barbaro, the owners of Barbaro. And the next minute, boom, there goes your world. And you know, that's why every time, you know, you see somebody that's never been on a horse or never ridden a race, oh, he's chicken. Or you see a guy or better, ah, oh, he's chicken, you know. You get on, let me throw you out of a car 30 miles an hour, see how it feels, you know. And, I, you know, don't get me wrong, that's what we sign ourselves up for. That's what they tell you. But, listen, it's nothing like pain, you know, to make you miserable.
Yeah, I mean, the jockstrom, there's some great days, but there's some really hard days, too. I mean, you've been in there a few times in those hard days the Ramon Dominguez getting hurt, Ron Turcotte, Mike Venezia, of course. I mean, those days are tough, right?
You know, if you have a bad day, you don't want to race, you know, it's a bad day, don't get me wrong, but on the side of the coin, you know, thank God you came home safe. You're going to go home to your families. And, you know, the stewards today and the way racing is today and the way riders are today, you know, everybody just, you know, they want to win races today. And it's like that everywhere. But it also, you know, it's a competitive market. And everybody wants to just go home to their families at night, you know. I mean, it's just no call for, like, trying to drop a rider or something, you know. Or you're in football and you want a head-to-head hit. It's things like that just don't belong. I mean, you know, people just want to make a living and go home to your family, you know.
And has that changed over the years? Is it cleaner now than it was?
I think the game, you know, the way the riders are today, I think it's, you know, it's a lot safer. You have cameras a lot. You have a lot of cameras now. It's not like the days, you know, back when Seabiscuit was running and, you know, you can do this and do that. I mean, the stewards are, you know, they have impeccable reputations, you know, to make the game safe. And all you want to do at the end of the day is, you know, you want the horse to come home safe. You know, you want the rider to come home safe. And, you know, you just want to move on. I mean, just it's no call for, you know, trying to drop a guy and have a spill or something, you know?
Yeah, the respect that you guys have in that room, I mean, that goes valid to the jockeys, everybody. I mean, it is a family, and you're working together. As hard as you are as competitors, you are working together to try to keep everybody safe.
Every aspect of the game, I've grown to, since I haven't been riding anymore, I've grown to have so much more respect for valets. The way they work every day, it's just a tough job. You know, you got one or two riders, you got to do this. You got a little window of opportunity to get back for the next race. And grooms are the most unheralded, you know, people in the game. I mean, I see grooms, they're there all day long, you know, and hot walkers and trainers and assistant trainers. You know, you get married to the job, you know, and I have to tell you, I mean, look at you. When you was riding, you probably did the same thing I did. And, you know, you're a horseman, you just... I mean, if you don't put yourself 100% into this game, you probably won't be successful. You know,
you're out there in the morning. I mean, you got them for Kelly Breen all summer long. How many you get on a bunch of horses in the morning too?
I mean, I work for Kelly Breen. I've worked for Gary Contessa, and I mean, I get up 4:15 in the morning. And I'm out by 5 o'clock, and it's a whole day. And then I come into the jock's room and I'll saddle horses. I'll do tack and everything. And you know, by the end of the day, you're tired. But on the other hand, it's like, I mean, that's what used to. I mean, this morning I had a morning off, and I feel like, I don't know, my body's like out of whack with a morning off, you know? So, you know, I mean, you know, you see guys like Alan Jerkins, Wayne Lucas, and Nick Zito. I mean, we're lifers, you know, Parkley Tag, and, you know, we're kind of lifers, I guess, in the game, you know?
Sure beats the Merchant Marines.
Absolutely. I mean, the greatest decision I made in my life is becoming a jockey and come on the racetrack.
That's a long way from the riding academy on the Belt Parkway.
It's a long, long way. Yes, it is. A lot of miles.
They have your picture on the wall of that academy. They must have you as a hero there or something, right? I mean, you must.
Heck no. I went in there a couple of years ago, and I said if they wanted me to teach somebody there, they had to kind of throw me out, you know. The only bad thing about sometimes this game is you're only as good as your last act. I mean, you ride a race, you win, you're great. The next race you lose, and boo, they boo you, you know. So, you know, it's a short window of opportunity, you know, to shake your hand. It's like bowling, you know. You win a race, and right away, there's 10 more pins to do it again, you know.
And for the Fanticipate question of the day, who was your biggest fan when you were a jockey?
My biggest fan? It's probably my father. Who probably never really got to see me ride. He died when I was a 10-pound bug, so, you know. And really, he was my biggest fan. And I wish that he could have lived to see me ride my whole career. Thank you.
That's Nick Santagata. Your dad be proud of you, my man.
Can't love that interview enough. My thanks to Sean and for Nick Santagata for putting that together during Saratoga this year. I'll be back with more right after this word from Fanticipate and My Racehorse.
Want to get closer to your favorite stars in racing? Fanticipate is an online auction platform where fans can bid on unique items from their favorite competitors before the gates even open. Compete with other fans to win items from owners, trainers, and jockeys participating in select Breeders' Cup Challenge Series races and more, and take home a piece of the race. Visit Fanticipate.com for more information and to view our live auctions. Own a piece of the action with Fanticipate.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Fletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online, enjoy insider access to your stable, and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today. My Racehorse offers securities only for the use of an offering circulation as part of an offering statement. Qualified by the securities and exchange under Tier 2 of Regulation A.
And our thanks to My Racehorse and to Fanticipate for their support of that segment. Speaking of Fanticipate, you know, the Win and You're In Challenge races are taking place at Keeneland today, and this is Fanticipate's final set of auctions prior to the World Championships in November. You can go to Fanticipate.com/Breeders' Cup to bid on some awesome items right now. 2 stretch run reserve seats to the Breeders' Cup World Championships, limited edition Maker's Mark bottle collection, that's pretty cool, and halters and other items that are worn by contenders in today's Thoroughbred Club of America, Claiborne Breeders Futurity, and Keeneland Turf Mile Stakes. Fanticipate.com/Breeders' Cup. All proceeds are going to benefit Breeders' Cup charities. So check it out right now and make sure you start bidding on those awesome items. How about that? 2 stretch run reserve seats to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. I'm there. Fanticipate.com/Breeders' Cup. I'm back to take you on a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker right after this. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 p.m. Eastern. Don't forget, on October 17th, we have the Grade 1 E.P. Taylor Stakes and the Grade 2 Nearctic Stakes. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
The Adina Springs Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformer Zaire, point of entry, a global sire with black type horses in 5 countries, and the number one sire of Grade 1 performers in his crop. Multiple Grade 1 winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose 2-year-olds race this year.
It is going to be won by Shaman Ghost. He has won the Woodward
weird.
Silent name. The only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America. And Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent poet in front of the Neoptic. And this one's for you, Martha. Silent poets won it.
And the newest addition to the Edina Springs roster, American Guru from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving. And American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
After an unprecedented year apart, the time has finally come to say, welcome back, fans, to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Welcome back to the prestige and excitement to witnessing history firsthand. As the world's most majestic athletes look to be crowned champion in 14 thrilling Breeders' Cup races. And over $31 million in purses and awards waits across the finish line. On November 5th and 6th at Del Mar, the Breeders' Cup will welcome it all back. The world's best thoroughbreds, the brightest stars, and the most passionate fans. An experience that's a breed apart. Tickets on sale now at BreedersCup.com/tickets.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thank you for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. It's Fall Stars weekend at Keeneland, where the Grade 1 Breeders' Futurity for 2-year-olds at a mile and a 16th will be among the offerings later today. Just 1 year ago, Essential Quality used a win in the Breeders' Futurity as a springboard to winning the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and an Eclipse Award. But today, we remember a horse who won both of those races, plus a championship, plus a $1 million bonus. His name was Boston Harbor. Foaled on April 4th, 1994 in Kentucky, Boston Harbor was a homebred for the Overbrook farm of William T. Young of Lexington. The colt sire Capote had won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile on the way to being named top 2-year-old of 1986. First Dam Harbor Springs was never a stakes winner, but had shown enough ability to win 7 of her 11 career starts. Both Capote and Harbor Springs have been purchased as yearlings from Keeneland's July sale by Dwayne Lucas. And just as he had trained the colt's mother and father, Lucas would now be called upon to serve as trainer for Boston Harbor. Lucas and Overbrook had already teamed to win the Kentucky Derby in the spring of 1996 with Grindstone. 3 weeks later, on Saturday, May 25th, Boston Harbor broke his maiden on debut with a 5-length romp over the same Churchill Downs racetrack. Speculation immediately began as to whether or not Lucas and Mr. Young had just unveiled the next Derby winner. On June 29th, in his second career start, Boston Harbor again won at Churchill, this time capturing the Grade 3 Bashford Manor by 4 lengths. The time for the 6-furlong distance was 1 minute, 9 and 4-5 seconds, a stakes record. Given that Boston Harbor was now 2-for-2 over the Churchill Downs strip, and given that he had emerged as the early season sensation in the Lucas barn, talk of Kentucky Derby glory began dominating conversations about the colt. But the 1997 Kentucky Derby was still 10 months away, and no one realized that more than Lucas and Young. When interviewed about Boston Harbor, Lucas and Young were not talking Kentucky Derby. They weren't even talking Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Instead, the immediate objective was the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund's $1 million bonus for any Kentucky-bred 2-year-old which could sweep the Commonwealth's 4 premier stakes for juveniles, the Bashford Manor, the Ellis Park Juvenile, the Kentucky Cup Juvenile, and the Breeders' Futurity. Lucas and Young had teamed to win that bonus 4 years earlier in its inaugural offering with the Overbrook homebred Mountain Cat, and they were determined to win it again. Following a brief foray to Saratoga and a 10-length drubbing in the mud in the Grade 3 Sanford Stakes, Boston Harbor returned to Kentucky and cruised by 6 lengths in the Ellis Park Juvenile. Donna Barton rode the colt just as she had done in his debut. And she was aboard again in the Kentucky Cup Juvenile when Boston Harbor drew clear on a wet fast track at Turfway Park by 7 lengths and secured a $250,000 bonus for having won the first 3 legs of the series. And then it was on to Keeneland. The date was October 11th, 1996. The race was the Grade 2 Breeders' Futurity. Jerry Bailey got the assignment to ride. Boston Harbor was the 1-5 favorite, and he went immediately to the front on a speed-favoring track. Turning for home, he briefly surrendered the lead before fighting back to salvage the win. The $1 million Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund bonus was his. All that remained was the Breeders' Cup Juvenile at Woodbine. And once again, Boston Harbor would face a stern challenge in the stretch. Tom Durkin with the call.
Boston Harbor, who heads for home with the three-length lead. But here comes Acceptable trying to mow him down with a furlong to go. On the inside, it's Cash Deposit. It is Boston Harbor tenaciously trying to fight off Acceptable as they come down to the line. Boston Harbor digs down deep, and yes, he would not be denied a championship.
Boston Harbor, the 2-1 second choice, not only won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, but also finished the season with 6 wins in 7 starts. He additionally set a North American record for a 2-year-old with $1.9 million in earnings. Boston Harbor would make just 1 start as a 3-year-old in 1997 before being retired after fracturing his left foreleg. He stood 4 seasons at Overbrook Farm before being exported to Japan, where he died earlier this year at the age of 27. He sired 20 stakes winners in his career while becoming the broodmare sire of an additional 35 stakes winners. We remember Boston Harbor, winner 25 years ago of the Breeders' Futurity at Keeneland and a $1 million bonus on his way to a 2-year-old championship. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Wonderful piece. My thanks to Lane's End and Keeneland for their sponsorship of those stroll-through racing history segments. You can catch them on our website, too, if you missed them, horseracingradio.net, a special podcast page available for you for all those stroll-through racing histories. When I come back, it's time to welcome Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. I ask, they answer. This should be a good one. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The moment we've all been waiting for is here. Racing returns to Keeneland for the fall meet, October 8th through the 30th. And tickets are now available online for pre-purchase. Place your bets during the fall meet anywhere, anytime from your phone with Keeneland Select. New accounts receive $100 back when you wager $200 on the fall meet, plus the standard $100 sign-up bonus. And Keeneland Select members receive free admission to Keeneland. Sign up to wager at KeenelandSelect.com.
The richest meet in Oak Lawn's history begins Friday, December 3rd through Sunday, May 8th. The 66-day meet will offer more than $45 million in purses with 36 stakes races totaling $12.3 million. And all allowance races are now worth $100,000. Oak Lawn boasts the richest Triple Crown prep series in the country, highlighted by the $1 million Rebel on Friday, February 26th, and the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby Saturday, April 2nd, now offering a purse of $1.25 million. Learn more at oaklawn.com.
Eclipse champion Blame. Among sires with less than 10 crops, he has more Grade 1 winners than any stallion standing under $100,000, including Grade 1 winners Nadal, Marley's Freedom, Fault, Abscond, and French Classic winner Singa, plus these recent standout performers. With success on the track and with yearlings bringing up to $400,000, this proven son of Arch is truly a gold value stallion. Blame. Standing at Claiborne Farm.
A 5-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrowgate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first 2 seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
The thrill of thoroughbred racing is back at Laurel Park. The brand new dirt surface and world-class turf course are ready for the races. Spend an afternoon dining with someone special at your choice of restaurants. Grab a bite with friends at the food court or relax and enjoy racing action from around the world in the sports bar. Laurel Park has it all. The beer is cold, the action is hot, and the horses are fast. Nothing beats a day at the track. Live racing Thursday through Sunday, post time, 12:40 p.m.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
So around the far turn, Nick's Go goes on with it. Opens up to lead by 2.5. Sprawl's in a full-out drive. Independence Hall is as well. Tacitus comes wide for the stretch drive. Shared Sense in behind them. Racing for the eighth pole. Nick's Go opens up a little bit more. Now it's 3. Independence Hall trying to close in toward the inside. Then it's Tacitus and Shared Sense. But Joel Rosario is merely along for the ride. It is Nick's All Systems Go to the Breeders' Cup. Geared down, an effortless winner of the Lucas Classic. Independence Hall was second. It's tight for third. Shared Sense or Tacitus?
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, and welcome to this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. That was Travis Stone with the call of last weekend's Lucas Classic at Churchill Downs. Nick's All Systems Go, and they certainly were last Saturday, and of course expecting that that will be the case when he heads to Del Mar for what is expected to be a date in the Breeders' Cup Classic in early November. And guys, I have to tell you, this first topic is a bit of a head-scratcher to me. A few weeks ago, we talked about three-year-old Essential Quality being ranked number one in the Breeders' Cup Classic poll. He held that position for 3 consecutive weeks before stablemate Nick's Go took over the top spot and was the number one ranked Classic contender going into last weekend's races. Now, as expected, you just heard, Nick's Go dominated the Lucas Classic at Churchill. He won by 4 lengths, and the chart read, in hand, glided away. So how is it that Nick's Go loses a spot and drops back to the number 2 position in the rankings following that dominant win? Timmy, you want it first?
Sure. I don't know what the big deal is. I've been voting for Essential Quality since this thing started. And I didn't change my mind after this race. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of astute voters on this panel. And I think they always look ahead. And, you know, Nick's Go has had everything his own way in these 3 wins he's had, the Cornhusker, the Whitney, then the Lucas. But in the Breeders' Cup Classic, you know, he's Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie, Art Collector. They all like to run on lead. I don't think, unless Nick's Go is just a real, real super horse and can get away from everybody, but he's going to get some pressure up front. And I think that's what would set up for Essential Quality. And I've thought that from the get-go when this poll started. And I wasn't surprised at all. I mean, I was surprised that Nick's Go was ahead of Essential Quality that 1 week.
Dale, how does he lose a spot after dominating the race the way he did?
Well, I think it's pretty easy. I don't know. Everybody knows it's corruption, voter fraud. I think he'll be returned to the top. Just give it time. I hear they're already recounting in Arizona, doing an audit. And everybody knows there can't be a fair election or a fair vote. But what I don't understand is why we concern ourselves with polls. In horse racing, you line it up, first one to wire wins. If you support the winner, you get bragging rights. If you supported the loser, you blame a jockey. It's pretty simple. It'll all be settled in 3 weeks.
You know, we say the same thing about college football, too, and college basketball. What do the polls really mean anything? And truthfully, in the end, they don't. It's the team that wins on the court, the team that wins on the field. And this is very much the same thing. Nick's Go is still ranked number one in the NTRA poll as the number one best horse in the country right now. But he's not number one in the Breeders' Cup Classic poll. That's a bit of a head-scratcher.
Well, I don't know if I've ever read a poll in my life on horse racing or paid any attention to it if I did. Line them up. Who gets to the wire first, that's the best horse, number one in the world.
Well, you know, the thing, too, is that these polls are made for discussion like this. This is what people like to do. They like to discuss things like this. And, you know, and I vote in both of those polls, and I voted for Essential Quality in both of them. So is that make me the bad guy? No, I don't think so. I think Essential Quality is the better horse, and I think he's going to prove it on Breeders' Cup Day because I think he's going to get the right setup for the race. And, you know, as far as the, you know, voter fraud goes, Dale, I think you forgot about Mississippi.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Georgia, too. We got to check that out, too. A lot of bad things going on.
A full recount coming up next weekend, no doubt about it. All right, let's move on. The next topic is a topic that we have also talked about over the past couple of weeks, and it involves Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert, who has been certainly on the hot seat, to say the least, since the Kentucky Derby. We are still awaiting a decision on whether or not he is going to be allowed to saddle horses in this year's Breeders' Cup. Bob is the all-time leader among trainers in Breeders' Cup history by money won. He is second only to Dwayne Lucas in the number of Breeders' Cup winners he has saddled. And with recent Graded Stakes winners such as Medina Spirit and Gamine and Private Mission and Pinehurst and so many others, Baffert could once again be holding an extremely strong hand here in the 2021 edition. So complete this sentence for me, guys, and Dale, I'll come to you first. Bob Baffert not being allowed to participate in this year's Breeders' Cup would be?
Criminal. It's not the way things work in the United States. He's not guilty of anything. Innocent until proven guilty. And believe me, I'm not defending his bad test, but I am defending the process because it can happen to anyone. And my one question is, let's go back in history and find out if the Breeders' Cup has allowed anyone who is either on appeal of a suspension or a violation, or if anyone in this year's Breeders' Cup will be running that it has a violation out floating out there or an appeal. I don't know. I'm not pointing any fingers at anybody, but I would bet if you start looking, you're going to find that someone has participated in the Breeders' Cup that has either been suspended and is on appeal or has a violation pending. It's just too easy for it to happen. And as far as taking points away, when you start using the Derby as a weapon and you're already punishing a man before he's ever had his hearing or his day in court, just there's something wrong with that.
You know, I think that Bob should be allowed to run in the Breeders' Cup. Like Dale said, he hasn't been proven guilty of anything yet. It's just a lot of hearsay, and not hearsay, but it's like he's being tried in social media. All these people come out and who really don't have any grounds to say anything, then they're basically branding the guy as the biggest criminal in the history of horse racing, which is certainly not true. I think that he will get to be allowed to run in the Breeders' Cup. It doesn't hurt that Pinehurst, the Futurity winner, is owned partly by Barbara Banky, Stone Street Stable, and she's the new elected Breeders' Cup chair. I'm sure that'll help him. And I think that, he's say what you will about Bob, but he is the face of horse racing, and people know him like they know Tom Brady to football, to to LeBron James to basketball. I mean, he is the guy that people want to see when they're at horse racing, other than Dale Romans, of course. And I think that I think when all said and done, he's going to be in the Breeders' Cup.
Well, you bring up a good point.
And I think he's going to do well.
You bring up a good point, too, Tim. It wouldn't be fair to punish the owners of those other horses, you know, Gamine and Private Mission, and you mentioned Pinehurst. It's not fair to punish those owners for something that Bob is still, first of all, as Dale said, not even proven guilty of at this point.
Well, yeah, it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer, in my opinion. You got to let the guy run, and you don't I mean, what are you going to do? It's take him out of his name for one race and put him in somebody else's. It's a joke. The horse has earned the right to be there. He's not proven guilty of anything yet. Let the due process run its course. I don't understand when Maximum Security gets disqualified in the Kentucky Derby, all you hear is we treat the Derby as any other race. We should treat it as any other race in all categories and let the process take care of itself.
And the other thing, too, is, we're a month away from the Breeders' Cup. I mean, it just wouldn't be fair to everybody if they're saying, like, it's going to be less than a month if they come out and say that he can't run. That's just not fair to anybody, the timing of it. It's just not right.
Would it be
if they would do that?
Would it be fair, and that's a relative term, but would it be fair to say, okay, he can run, but his horses have to undergo extensive testing like they did in Baltimore for the Preakness with Medina Spirit?
Well, horses do for these big races already go under those testing protocol. There's plenty of testing. And if you got better testing, we should be doing it on all of them, not just because his name's Bob Baffert.
Yep.
Let's do extensive testing on all of them. But they have had a competition test, and they start cheat testing you weeks out and continue to. And they did for the Derby. And I've never heard one time what came up on his out of competition testing before the Derby ran. I'd like to know what the results were of that. It's just it's a bad situation all the way around, but we're just making it worse by trying it in this court of public opinion.
Yeah. All right, one more topic. Let's move on to this one. We have one more somewhat serious topic and then a fun one coming up after that. So Speaking of medication violations, trainer Rohan Christian was among five trainers based at Gulfstream Park serving a suspension with the Stronach Group and with all of their tracks for violating house rules regarding their clenbuterol policy. And I'll say that again, house rules regarding their particular clenbuterol policy. Christian was hoping that he would be allowed to run his four-year-old filly, Bayesian Girl, in tomorrow's Grade 1 Spinster at Keeneland. However, Keeneland officials informed him this week he would not be able to enter. Do you guys agree or disagree with Keeneland's decision? Dale?
First of all, I'm 100% against any house rules. You know, the house rule, a regulation or a rule change in Kentucky has to go in front of the legislators. They have hearings on it. People are allowed to come and speak. It's a serious topic. The rule change or the regulation is vetted to make sure it's the right thing for the horses and it's fair for everyone participating. A house rule can be somebody who's just gotten hired on a whim deciding what this policy should be. And I think it's wrong for someone sitting in an office and going against state regulations to come up with a policy for a legal permitted medication that's proven very effective for cleaning up bronchial issues used properly. I don't understand what the house rule is. I'm going to have to look into it before I go back down there. But still, they are not none of those trainers are suspended by the state. Their licenses aren't affected from what I've read. The only thing is they've violated a policy and Gulfstream is refusing to take their entries. Seems very similar to a different issue where in Kentucky, a trainer is refusing to take his entries, but yet he's still allowed to run in New York and California. You know, it's a dead horse we keep beating with Bob Baffert, but it seems like the exact same scenario, and yet he's allowed to run and at racetracks in other states. These guys should be able to, too. I want to look more into the house rule.
Well, I think that it goes back to which I've thought that horse racing should have had years and years ago is a commissioner like they do in any other sport. Let him be the one that makes the rules. You get different sets of rules at every state and every racetrack. I mean, it's enough to make your head spin. I think that if they had a commissioner for rules for every all over, one commissioner for the whole sport, I think it would be a lot better for everybody. And I don't think you'd have all this confusion with trainers that get these rulings against them. And, you know, if you have a guy that says this is the rule, that's the rule. Then you go from there.
And yeah, but they don't even have a state commission on horse racing in Florida. It's really a joke. And it's run under one of the cabinet level departments, but they don't even have a state commission. Something like this would not happen in Kentucky because we wouldn't let a house rule trump a state regulation or rule.
So if you're a Keeneland official, does Bayesian Girl get to run in the Spinster tomorrow? Should she?
Should be running, no doubt. Should absolutely be lined up and running. This guy's not license is not affected, and it's a house policy that they've decided not to take his entries. He should exactly be able to run. The judge in New York said Bob Baffert got to run. If you remember when the state of New York tried to stop him from running, it's such a similar situation. The license is not affected in Kentucky as of yet, but Churchill's just decided they don't want him. It's the same situation. They should be running.
All right, here we go. Topic number four. Buy Hubby Hello Money was among the contenders in Thursday's featured race at Belmont Park this week. I personally think her name is, well, number one, hilarious and extremely clever. She is a daughter of FNX out of a mare named Shocking Behavior. So Buy Hubby Hello Money is an appropriate name. What are your personal top five best horse names of all time, guys? Timmy?
You want me to go five in a row?
Five in a row. Let's see what you got.
All right. I'm going to start with a horse named Marfa. He won the Santa Anita Derby in 1983, and people might say that's not such a great name. But to me, it means a lot because back in the day, the Daily Racing Form wanted to hire me as a special correspondent when I was working at the Albany Times Union. And I said, yeah, I'll do it, but I can't use my name. So they came up with the name Ray Marfa. So I was Ray Marfa for a whole summer. So Marfa became a horse to me that was it had a special bond to me, if you want. So Marfa is one. I'm going to go sort of one of my favorite horses, and I'm going to use her name, is Swiss Skydiver, because she has a cool name. And her name was came about because her owner, Peter Callahan, got a surprise video text message from his granddaughter one day, and he almost fell out of bed when he saw it. It was a video of her skydiving over the Swiss Alps. So that horse became Swiss Skydiver.
Love it.
My third horse, this goes back in 2008-ish, a horse named R. He was, from the old pirate thing. And I think he went 12 races before he broke his maiden at Saratoga. And Tom Durkin had a great time calling that horse as he was coming down the stretch. R. I still remember that. Southern Phantom was a name that I liked. It was from our old friend Eric Gio. The horse was named that way because he had such a unique white face. He looked like the Phantom of the Opera. So yep. I'm going with that one. And my fifth, I'm going back into the 90s, a horse named Flat Fleet Feet.
Yeah.
Was trained by John Kimmel, owned by his dad, Caesar Kimmel. And he liked to screw around with Durkin by naming horses that would be tongue twisters for him during a race call. And he certainly achieved that by calling a horse Flat Fleet Feet. So those are my five.
Love it. Dale, how about you? Your top five horses?
I don't know if I want to come up with five real off the top of my head, but I will say this. FNX is the greatest of all time. If anybody knows that story, it's a veterinarian in New York that got divorced and lost every single thing but the yearling. And he named it FNX and ended up making $5 million. So he got the last laugh. So that's one of the great ones. Another one, Mike Pegram, as the story goes, bought a horse with Bob Baffert at the Calder 2-year-old sale. And they got it off the van and it was sore. So he names it, Is It In Good? Because he thought he got screwed. And he ended up being a multiple grade one winner and dominant horse of his time. But I'm only going to come with three. The greatest name in horse racing, and it is still in our culture today, is Who beat Man of War?
Ooh. Upset.
Upset. Everyone thinks that that's a coincidence.
Yep.
But in truth is, it created the term of when an underdog beats a favorite. Upset. That's another upset. Before that, it was David over Goliath. They called it a David. It became upset. It's still in American culture, and I think that's a cool thing about horse racing. Got to be the most popular name in history.
Dale Roman, strong with the racing history names. Outstanding, Dale. Dale, don't hang up. I know you like to hang up at this point when we get done with the topics, but I have one bonus topic that you guys don't know is coming, but I thought it was appropriate today. The 108th running of the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity is part of a stellar Saturday card at Keeneland today. Our very own Dale Romans has saddled four winners in that race, which puts him two behind the all-time leader, Dwayne Lucas. Dale, you have two horses entered into the race later today. Timmy, Dale's most recent win came 4 years ago with Free Drop Billy. Stay with me on this one. This is good. But this isn't the only one that I want to focus on here today, because when you look at his other races, Free Drop Billy was a favorite. Dale's other three wins in this race came in 2015, Brody's Cause, 11-1. 2011, Dullahan, however you say that horse's name, 17-1. And 2005, Dawn of War, a 31-1 upsetter, the longest price winner of the Breeders' Futurity in 92 runnings at that point. And Timmy, I have to tell you, those upsets immediately made me think back to Court Vision, who upset the 2011 Breeders' Cup Mile at 64-1, Little Mike, a 17-1 winner of the Breeders' Cup Turf, and Keen Ice, who shocked everyone when he knocked off Triple Crown winner American Pharoah in the Travers at 16-1. So, Tim Wilkin, I'm going to ask you, which trainer is better at pulling a rabbit out of a hat in a big race, Dwayne or Dale?
Wow. Well, I love Dale, but I think if you look at Dwayne's resume, some of the shockers he's had. I mean, you look at Thunder Gulch was 24-1 when he won the 95 Derby. Oxbow was 15-1 in the 13 Preakness. Charismatic 31-1 in the 99 Derby. Commendable 18-1 in the Belmont 2000. Spain 55-1 in the Breeders' Cup Distaff, and to a lesser effect, Sporting Chance was 5-1 when he won the 2017 Hopeful over our friend Mr. Roman's horse.
He should have come down.
He should have come down. I was just going to say that, but he didn't. And, you know, but I think if Dale wins with one of his two long shots on Saturday, he's going to close the gap on Mr. Lucas. But, you know, two trainers that have a real knack of pulling a surprise when no one expects it. And I wouldn't be surprised if Dale pulls a surprise this week.
Dale, how do you pull it off? What's the key?
I would tell you the key was education Wayne Lucas gave me years ago. Is when your horse is doing well, put him in the right, put him in the big spots. If you run up the racetrack, they'll talk about you for a day. If you upset, they'll talk about you for life. And if you got a horse doing well, don't listen to people. Jump in. Wayne's been a great mentor to me, but let me just go out and save Tim from having to name Wayne. I've never been or ever will be as good at anything in horse racing as Wayne Lucas, and I owe a lot of my success in these bigger races to him.
Well, I think you're being a little modest there, Dale. You fit into the equation of the trainers that people listen to when talking about anything in horse racing. And I'm just not saying that because you're on the phone here with me, but I think that you're selling yourself a little too short there.
Yeah, that's why he's on this segment.
Only to Wayne Lucas. I'm better than the rest of them. It's just Wayne
sitting in my head. All right, fantastic. Guys, appreciate it here. Hey, no technical issues with this show today. Well done. We got through it.
All right, fellas. Talk to you later.
Thank you. All right. We're back next week with another brand new edition of I Ask, They Answer. Tim Wilkin, Dale Romans, they will take a look at all the big topics, and that was fantastic. Really fun here this morning. I'm back to wrap it up right after this. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Gainsway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling at Saratoga. Taprit's victories include the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes.
And they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry turns for home with Taprit trying to run him down in the last furlong. The two of them are now a half length apart. They are clear of Gormley and Patch. It is Irish War Cry, and on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
In his first 2 years at stud, Taprit has bred over 240 mares. Now his first weanlings have arrived, selling for up to $100,000. One of the best bred sons of Sire Sire's Taprit to ever enter stud. Classic winner and stakes record setter, Taprit, standing at Gainesway.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
He flew fighter jets in two wars and taught you how to drive a car. He fed everyone on the block but never shared his secret recipes. And every time he'd tell a story, he'd own the room. But now more than ever, he may feel alone. Today, older adults and their loved ones are struggling to connect in a time when connection has never been more important. But there is something we can do. Embrace our older loved ones through StoryCorps Connect. With StoryCorps Connect, you can honor seniors remotely with an interview about their life. Every interview will be archived at the Library of Congress, becoming part of American history, so that years from now, future generations can listen in.
All right, Grandpa, what's one piece of advice you have for me?
Just three words, sweetheart. Live with courage.
The man that had the best stories still has plenty of stories to tell. So connect virtually and share the conversation of a lifetime at StoryCorpsConnect.org/AARP. Connect, honor, share. StoryCorps Connect. A message from AARP, StoryCorps, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
I'm
Manny Franco, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, did you know that Bloodhorse Daily has the largest subscriber base of any thoroughbred industry electronic daily newsletter and was recently honored for the second year in a row as the best equine-related electronic publication by the American Horse Publications Media Awards? Keep up to date with what's going on in our industry. You can sign up today to have the Bloodhorse Daily emailed to you once a day. It is free, and you can get started right now by going to bloodhorse.com/daily. Well, update on the poll question today. The poll question was, should Bob Baffert be allowed to run horses in this year's Breeders' Cup? You just heard Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin weigh in on the issue, and I ask, they answer. So far, 61% of you saying, nope, he should not. Only 35% saying, yes, he should, and 4% are undecided. I appreciate all the votes coming in at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and those of you who took time to email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Really appreciate your feedback there, too. My thanks to all of our guests for making this show possible here this morning. Gatewood Bell kicked it off at 8:15. From Keeneland, Fausto Gutierrez looked ahead to tomorrow's Grade 1 Spinster with Latruska. Kelly Breen went down the road to the Breeders' Cup with us, talking about the Vosburgh later today. Paul Espinoza talking about the big night at Charlestown. Scott Hazelton from Keeneland and TVG was here. Sean Clancy went in the room with Nick Santagata. Kurt Becker for his stroll through racing history. And, of course, Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin for I Ask, They Answer. Back next week with another brand new edition. Of course, we kick things off this week on Wednesday with Race Day. Bobby Newman. We'll be with you 3 to 6 Eastern. If you missed any portion of the show, head to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, for Chauncey handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to the Equine Forum presented by Woodbine. Go Steelers!